It's Friday!
Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Sorry for going too far into the drum loop. I was just checking the radar. It's gotten rather dark outside. And so the usual disclaimer applies. Namely, if the program should happen to suddenly disappear, that's because there's been some thunder somewhere and the antiquated, rickety, last century coal fried, held together with baling wire, spit, toilet paper, and chewing gum wrappers, power grid of Appalachian Power has heard the thunder and run under the bed to hide. God, Stephen Miscarron's little Cletus has more fortitude than the Appalachian Power grid. Hi, I'm Robin, and it is Friday on the front porch. It is time for us to do our weekly check-in to see what's on other people's minds, what's on the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group's mind, and here in about, 57 minutes or so, unless I overfill a lobster, we will go over the river and through the trees to the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves and gather around the aforementioned Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable and see what's going on. Okay? And I presume that there is a button up at headon.live if you would like to pop in and check out Friday on the Front Porch for yourself, and you are mightily welcome to do so. In the meantime, if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, Then wander on over to headon.live. Maybe pop by the PayPal button on the way. That'd be mighty nice if you're feeling kindly in that regard. Pop by the PayPal button and throw a little something in the jar so that we can continue to keep this little broadcast effort on the air. Fundraising goal this evening is, we'll get to that after we say thank you. But also, if you do pop into the chat room, you will be greeted by early arrivers, Anatole and Kid Mark and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has decided not to fold space to become Man Cave, but rather is remaining Sparky in the room. So, pop on in and do feel free, Sparky, and I know you do. To lightsaber brain, whomever that may be. I think brain is just a sort of an avatar now, but feel free to zap brain if brain happens to wander by. I don't think it's the real brain, but anyway, thanks go out to our eighth day of the month PayPal subscribers, and that means thank you. To Dwayne, thank you so much. And thanks as well to Nancy. And thank you to Marcia. Thank you to Susan. Thank you to David out in San Diego. Thank you all so very much. And thanks as well. Oops, didn't mean to do that. Thanks as well jumping into the into the fray. Thank you to Brendan, and thank you as well to Cecilia. Thank you both so very much. What that means is that our fundraising goal has dropped to $875 to finish the week. That means we've got today, yesterday, and $275 of prayer meeting Wednesday. Yep, there's the first peal of thunder. I don't feel particularly inspired by the likelihood of the power staying on, but there will be a, the way you'll know that the program's going away is you will hear you'll hear a lot of beeping as the uninterruptible power supplies begin warning me that things are going down. Things are going down. Maybe I could, but yeah, you get the idea. Yeah, there's another one. Could get a little noisy. Well, that's what you get in July in the temperate rainforest, which is what Central Appalachia is, and I do love it here. And, you know, it gets so hot that it just can't help not storming. So the fact that it happens during airtime. Okay. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for the head up. I appreciate that. I'm just taking a quick peek at the email box. Ron in Raleigh writes early. Murdering with impunity once again. Well, it seems the State Department spokescreep Ned Price has once more kissed the ass of Israel. The murder of Shireen Abu Akleh, and I saw this story a couple of days ago. A Palestinian-American shot in the head by the IDF is called an inadvertent tragic circumstance. How do these people sleep at night? Jamal Khashoggi, a resident U.S. Saudi journalist, hacked to bits by Mohammed Bonesaw, and the men charged with his murder are then pardoned by the ghoul that ordered his killing. Joe Biden goes to Saudi Arabia and bends the knee to this vile murderer. We ought to be deeply ashamed. I guess if the police in Akron can kill an unarmed black man with 60 bullets, one journalist can be shot in the head or another dismembered. It's all a small price to pay for our continued relationship with our, and you know, I do miss my reverb sometimes, partners in peace. I know, it's sickening, isn't it? I mean, every time I think about our relationships with that that benighted, awful portion of planet Earth, I'm re-embarrassed. Because there's not just a hell of a lot of good going on over there. I mean, and if we were serious about getting free of oil, we could tell the entire Middle East to just fuck right off. And what a glorious day of freedom that would be. But I guess we're not going to do that. But hey, gas prices are going down. The $3 mark, or the under $4 mark, has been reached again. And I guess that's good news. I would love to tank up the car. That would be lovely. Meanwhile, Scott in San Diego, subject line, Patty C., the dancing machine, in a discussion on TV earlier today about how Pat Cipollone might testify today to the January 6th panel, I heard something that confused me. It was suggested that he'd likely dance around the pinhead. I'm just not clear whether it meant a theoretical number of angels boogieing on top of one or if the comment referred to the actual tangerine-tinted pinhead-in-chief. That might have been uttered by someone who was actually kind of a clever practitioner of the art of word-knowing, Scott. Dance around the pinhead. Because there aren't any pinheads on the January 6th commission. There's a couple of Republicans, but they seem to be Republicans of the not entirely vomitous stripe. Dance around the pinhead. Because that would kind of, I can see why you're confused, because that would imply that Pat Cipollone's an angel, which you don't get to work in the Maggot administration and still be. That's why no matter who's testifying or deciding that they value their skin more than Nitwit Nero's orange hide, it still doesn't particularly speak to me because, well, they still took the job. They cashed the checks. It's who they were. Ralph wants to know, what happened to your reverb? My reverb disappeared when we changed out the mixer. And there's no special effects at all on the Rodecaster Pro, which we use now because it's a lot simpler and cuts down on the amount of patch cords and cables and whatnot that are required to get this program out there, and also increases our telephony somewhat so that we can have the stress line, we can have Skype, etc., and we don't have to pay for a landline through Frontier Communications, who were no end of trouble over the years. So that's a couple of things to get us started today. I want a reminder, Mike Malloy is still under the weather, still recovering, and he is recovering. He's getting better. I've spoken to him. He sounds better and better. But he's still kind of cruddy, so he wanted to have the remainder of the weekend to get to further recuperate. So Tara and I will be filling in for him after the program this evening. I have had so much fun chatting with Tara over the course of the past week. It's been an absolute delight, and I think we're going to try to figure out some way to do some sort of Super Friends thing. Yep, there it is. Here, listen. That's one. I need to check on something real quick. Well, we made it 12 minutes into the program before it crashed the first time, and that reminds me, I've got something to add to the to-do list for this weekend, and that is to repatch all the uninterruptible power supplies. But it's not a good sign when the program disappears in the first 12 minutes of the program. Yeah, thanks, Randy Radar, for letting me know the stream went down because Appalachian power went down, and in the interim, I checked outside and. It's pouring. It's coming down in buckets. And when I opened the door to the Fabulous Horn Studios here at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, I was struck by the aroma of freshly charged ozone. You know, every time, what is it? Every time lightning strikes. Well, that slightly metallic, really, really fresh, that's brand new O3. Yeah, we're under a severe thunderstorm warning right now, so we'll just hope that things hold up. Suman says, Frontier is pissed at you. You mentioned them in the program, went to Bufferland. Well, no, we don't have any Frontier stuff in here anymore. All we have is Shintel and Appalachian Power. And bless their heart, Shintel stayed up, but like I said, I got to repatch the... oh, my God, we're into night baseball now. Deep in the weeds. I got to repatch the power cord for the router and the gizmo that goes with the router into the part of the uninterruptible power supply that is, well, uninterruptible. Yeah. Well, at least you've got a hobby, Matt. Subject line, interruption. I've simply started enthusiastic square dancing when the music starts when the power goes down. Yeehaw! Yeehaw indeed, Matt. Sounds like you're having a hell of a lot more fun than me. I hope that's going to be the last one, but usually they come in threes, and it comes back after the first one, goes down again, comes back, and then the third time, it doesn't come back. And it really, really does suck. What are we looking at for the remainder of the program? Oh, good, 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 good. 100% chance of rain in the 6 o'clock hour. 70% chance in the 7 o'clock hour. I don't feel good about this, but we'll get as far as we can. Now, where were I? Let's check in back in Highland Park, Illinois. Let's check in with Paul Cremo. Paul Cremo is the uncle of Bobby Cremo, who murdered 7 people this past Monday. 22 years old. Awake the rapper. I don't know. Whatever he was. Needle-dicked incel and pencil-neck geek. But Uncle Paul has spoken out on behalf of Dad Bob Cremo, Republican and maggot candidate for mayor of Highland Park back in 2019, saying, I support him 100%. I think he did the right thing. By signing off so that his boy could buy some freedom protectors. Yeah. Daddy signed off on the firearm owner's identification card. And he took into his possession the knives and swords that police had previously confiscated. Speaking of his nephew, Paul Cremo said, people recover quickly. Maybe he recovered quickly and he was in his right mind frame at that time. My brother probably saw no trouble when he signed. Yeah, I mean, if it was me, no, I wouldn't. I probably wouldn't have signed it. I think the law's got to be tightened up. Oh, dear God. And we wonder why these things happen. When thunderclaps, Scott in San Diego asks, does an angel get its wings or is that celestial bowling? Well, when it rains, I remember seeing a play years and years and years ago called Da. And it was, the characters are Irish. And in speaking of his father, he said, every time it rained, my father said, oh, look, 'tis the angels taking a pee. Never made me feel better about rain, somehow. The Cremo clan, Matt in San Francisco, says, this group gives credence to the old saying, get a bigger gene pool. A doughboy is not enough. I can't imagine what it would be like to be someone who was directly impacted by what happened in Highland Park and know that the murderer's uncle was saying,
Well, I think my my brother did the right thing here. Yeah, sure.
I don't know why I did that in a sort of Bill Murray voice. Maybe it's because it's raining outside and my inner assistant greenskeeper, I hear it.
Well, I don't think the hard stuff's going to come down for quite some time.
We talked a little bit about, and Scott chimed in, I guess it was a couple of days ago, about the Internal Revenue Service channeling their inner Nixon to do a number on James Comey and Andrew McCabe, subjecting them to a really, really tough audit. Well, the Washington Post followed up, and, they published the following. The agency has faced previous suspicions that its examinations had been leveraged by political actors shortly after the 2012 presidential election. Mark Everson, who served as IRS commissioner during the George W. Bush administration, received a call from an investigative reporter about the coincidental enforcement audits of two aides to Mitt Romney, now a senator from Utah, who was the Republican challenger to Obama that year. And so the bottom line is that, the headline says, IRS alum successfully killed story about political targeting prior to Comey and McCabe revelations. How's about that? Because when reporters Jacob Bogage and Josh Dawsey talked to the aforementioned Mark Everson, speaking to the Post, Everson said, I said to the reporter, please tell me you have something more than that the individual said they were under audit shortly after the election. The funny thing is, the story never ran. Looks like it might be time to do a little house cleaning at the IRS. Who knows? And meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, a Senate committee there has pushed a constitutional amendment out of committee and will send it to the full Senate, saying that no Pennsylvanian has any right to any sort of abortion care whatsoever. And today, the Pennsylvania Senate itself voted 28-22 to approve the amendment language. It also says there's no public funding for it either. They stayed up late, the Pennsylvania Senate did, to get that language through. It'll go to the House of Representatives in Pennsylvania now. And one wonders if this might blow up in their face, and one certainly hopes that it does. You know, Yosemite Sam style. The way procedure works in Pennsylvania, I suppose, identical versions of the same language have to be approved by both houses in consecutive legislative sessions, and then it goes on the ballot for the voters to vote on. So we're talking about maybe it showing up on the spring 2023 primary ballot. Well, they just handed a tremendous organizing tool to people who don't like being compulsory Catholics. Sort of what this our majestic, most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic Majesties declared 2 weeks ago today. Oh, and by the way, I haven't said it yet, but remember, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. Have we memorized that yet? From the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of. Bold lot, these Republicans. Oh, they're so terribly happy at what they've done to women. But not so much when it comes to Ohio Governor Mike DeWine. He took some questions, I guess you could say that. But when it came to answering questions about the 10-year-old girl who actually made it to Talibandiana so that she could get an abortion and not have to bear a child, a rape child, with her under and undeveloped body, well, DeWine took some questions on Wednesday. The Cincinnati Inquirer asking the question about the little girl. Yeah, said DeWine, first of all, I have no more information than you do or anybody does. Reading it in the paper, it came as, you know, from a story out of Indiana from a doctor over there. I was gut-wrenching to think about that little girl being raped. I mean, I'm a father and a grandfather, and I hope the doctors who took care of her reported it to law enforcement. So basically, he's trying to dance, dance around the pinhead? Or was this the pinhead dancing? I'm not sure, Scott. And start talking about the crime that was committed instead of talking about the needs of the little 10-year-old girl. And he didn't quite have enough starch or courage of his convictions to deal with the fact that he signed the law that kept her from being able to get care in Ohio. So then yesterday, his press creep, Dan Tierney, was asked something similar. Do you think juvenile rape victims who become pregnant should be able to get abortions, or do you think they should be forced to carry their pregnancies to term there, Dano? To which this spokes creep replied,
well, you have access to Governor DeWine's recent comments on these issues, including that the only information available on the Indiana matter is from Indiana media reports. I do not have further comment for you beyond yesterday's remarks and the governor's numerous and extensive comments since the Supreme Court decision in Dobbs.
And she just barely made it. Just barely. Because the Talibandiana fascist theocrat legislature will come into session on July 25th, specifically for the purpose of making sure that they codify the fact that that what was said in the dissent in Dobbs, that from the point of fertilization a woman has no rights to speak of, actually becomes the law of the state of Talibandiana. I don't know what's going on in Ohio, but back in 2019, after he signed the six-week ban, DeWine, the news hit that an 11-year-old in Ohio, who was repeatedly raped by a 26-year-old man and got her pregnant, well, that child at least was able to get the relief that she needed, because back then, the six-week ban, the heartbeat ban, you know, for the heartbeats from fetuses that don't have hearts. It was stayed. First, they took her to a pregnancy care center, which is another one of those bullshit Christian dodges, where they victim-shamed the 11-year-old, citing her in reports as rebellious, and she refuses to listen to her mother and runs away from home all the time. Well, okay. I guess that meant she deserved to be raped. Don't you just love Christian Republicans? Yeah. And I guess it'll be a while before we find out. Find out exactly what Pat Cipollone said today. If we find, hopefully, we will find out at all. So anything about that would be purely speculative. Oh, and let's go down to Talabama because it's always so fun. The Democratic Party in Talabama is, for all intents and purposes, moribund. But it's not hard to see why. You know, we've talked a lot on this program about Henry Cuellar. And there's a general consensus that he should be run out of town on a rail and run out of the Democratic Party on one, too. Because he is, he's anti-woman. And I refuse to, I'm not going to give them that moniker that they've attached to themselves, because they are not that. And frankly, I'm so disgusted now at this point that anybody that says they are that thing, I'm going to say, so, you've adopted it, you've adopted a Walton family's quotient of babies, right? Right, you've done that, and you've made sure that you didn't just adopt little white babies, and you're doing everything that your religion compels you to do, and you're in the pews every day. If you're Catholic, you go to Mass every day. If you're some sort of Southern Baptist or something, you're there Sunday morning, Sunday nights, and prayer meeting Wednesdays. Otherwise, shut up. Oh, I despise them. But I had never heard of this woman before. Her name is Yolanda Flowers. And she's the Democratic nominee for governor in Alabama. She, of course, does not have a snowball's chance in hell. Because she's, she's not very, it's not just that she's not electable because Alabamians are Alabamians. As a Democrat, if I lived down there, I'd have a hard time, voting for her. Because, of course, Yolanda Flowers, Democrat of Alabama, is against abortion. But she's a real forward-thinking Democrat for Alabama. No, she's not. But she says that at least victims of rape and incest shouldn't be sent to jail if they do get an abortion after being raped or subjected to incestuous copulation. Well, that isn't that just mighty, mighty Christian of Yolanda? But she's a hard ass, just like they like them in Talabama. And so, if anyone is convicted of rape, then she is all for. Well, this is the quote: "If the man commits such acts towards women, castrate him, doggone it, cut the pecker off." Of course, she's absolutely ignorant of the fact that rape is not a sex crime. It is a crime of violence and power. And she also doesn't like the idea of politicians keeping their politics and their religion separate. She went to Facebook recently, Yolanda did, and said, "Let's remember our brothers and sisters in Illinois and in Ohio and all across our country who are suffering from death because of gun violence. Civil war is beckoning to come in. What can we do to stop it?" And just to hear people say things like God or religion is not to be in politics, this mindset makes me believe they are not human and aliens have invaded our planet. Oh, spare me. But, you know, o temporis, o moris, or o moris, o temporis. I saw this in the stack earlier today. this is going to end well. There's a Christian group called Patriots for America. They're neither Christian nor patriotic. And they have recently declared that they are going to fight to defend everyone's constitutional rights while helping protect our borders and working together with law enforcement to rescue minors and children from sex trafficking. Something tells me there's more than a little bit of cue ball in this bunch. And they're being written about in glowing terms by folks like Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda. And they're not a militia. They're not well regulated. And they're going to go down and make law enforcement's job even harder. Nonetheless, so the last thing we're going to do is be mean to the illegal aliens. We're not going to be the evil face that they've seen for however long, a month, 2 months, that they've been walking away from whatever country. We're going to be the face of Jesus Christ. We're going to show them love because Lord knows they haven't been shown any love for most of their journey. Really? Spare me. There will probably be some horror story out of another horror story out of the border sometime soon. It'll have something to do with probably some Christian militia member, maybe, I don't know, raping an immigrant kid or dozen. Well, that's interesting. Steve in New York points out, Cremo the killer. It just occurred to me the slogan that the Nazis put on the banners they carried was Deutschland erwach, which means Germany awake. I wonder if there is a connection between Cremo's rapper name. That's very interesting. They will, you know, they'll appropriate it. Yeah, awake the rapper. Yeah, I don't think, just from the looks of him, I'm guessing he's not a big fan of Doom, you know, the sleeper has awakened. In which case, he would be awakened, the rapper, anyway, wouldn't he? That's an interesting observation, though. Oh, and speaking of the border, and, well, frankly, on down into Old Mexico, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, we know what they're up to. In fact, we recently found out to our horror what they were up to. But the bishops in Mexico are on a different mission. Bishop Sigfrido Noriega called for a social pact with the narco-terrorists, a pact where even the bad guys could have a say. That's, well, I wonder how that happened. And the church came out and started talking that way after a couple of priests were blown away in their church last month. Oof. It all comes from a report on from Mexican newspaper Milenio. The Bishop of Zacatecas suggested directly speaking with members of organized crime. Zacatecas is one of Mexico's states most affected by violence related to drug trafficking and is leading in the ranking murderers this year. They bumped off a pair of, well, Father Javier Campos, 79 years old, and Father Joaquin Mora, the Sinaloa cartel had chased a tourist guide into the church, and the priest tried to protect the tourist guide, but, well, they gunned down all three. And about 2 days later, they dumped the bodies about 125 miles from the church. A statement from the Archdiocese of Mexico said, "The murder of the Jesuit priests reinforces the call to examine the security strategy in Mexico as we are experiencing a wave of historical violence. The number of murders so far this year, or so far this six-year term, exceeds 122,000 people. And why are there drug cartels in Mexico? Just, I mean, for the life of me, I can't imagine. It couldn't have anything to do with the fact that we caused it, could it? Nah. So in the last day or so, and bouncing back north of the border again, we found out about the Liberty, what was it, Liberty Council? Yeah, Liberty Council, that tax-free lawyer dodge that has been going in and actually in the Supreme Court, in chambers, grunting and praying and hobbling about on their knees with various and sundry members of the Supreme Court, and that their amicus curiae brief was actually cited by Sammy Bad Breath within the four corners of the Dobbs decision. You know, the same decision that also cited favorably gruntings by, well, a judge named Hale, who sent women to be murdered in the name of the theocracy for witchcraft. Salem witch trials, huh? Yeah. I guess there's nothing that will make the mumblings of a God botherer off limits, as long as he's saying something that you think means that you get to shit on more than half of the people in this country. Well, we've got more information now. There was something called Operation Higher Court. And it was run by a guy named Rob Schenck, a minister for the Assemblies of God, Church God. Yeah, these are some floor rollers. These are some Crisco anointers. I don't think they handle snakes anymore. But it was called Faith and Action, and they were subsumed under the umbrella of Liberty Council and taken over by, what was her name, Nina Berger, the one that went in and grabbled about on her knees in the chambers of presumably the likes of, you know, Neil Gorsuch and Brat, who's terribly upset. He's terribly upset. He tried to go to dinner at Morton's of Chicago in D.C. last night, and they just, well, the unruly protesters just ruined his din-din. Actually, no, he never heard them, and he never saw them. But the poor baby had to leave without dessert. Damn. And Morton's is terribly upset. Never mind. The story out of Politico features an account by Rob Schenck, who headed Faith and Action Group from 1995 till 2018. They were right there back behind the Supreme Court itself. I've probably walked past the place 100 times. And he used to make it possible for, like, 20 couples to fly into D.C. and visit with and entertain Slappy Thomas, Sammy Bad Breath, and the, well, Fat Dead Tony. And while they were there, they would talk about how we must end the scourge of abortion and save the precious little fetuses. But it wasn't just that. While they were sitting there talking with Slappy and Sammy Bad Breath and the like and Fat Dead Tony, they'd also talk about how we got to keep the homosexuals down and people have to be free to buy guns. You know, the whole right-wing wish list. He said that when they were going in to talk with the black-robed theocrats. By the way, did you know that they wear black robes because of the back in the day the courts were staffed by church judges? It's a hearkening back to the priestly nature of canon courts, ecclesiastical courts. But Rob Schenck told Politico, we'd rehearse lines like, we believe you're here for a time like this. Which is a dog whistle reference to the Book of Esther. Hadassah, who became the Queen of Persia. Purim, the Jewish holiday Purim. Revolves around the Esther story. So here we are with another moment where you've got Supreme Court justices who obviously have no regard whatsoever for their oath of office and are taking meetings with people who are advocating for issues that will clearly come before the court, and no one has filed a bill of impeachment over this. How long, O Lord, how long? They reached out to Matt Staver. You remember, this is the genius lawyer who got Sister Clerk Kim Davis in the slammer down in Kentucky Stan. He's been supping off of the 501c3 Dodge for eons. And when he was asked about it, you know, Liberty Counsel took over the work of Rob Schenck.
I don't know a lot about what Rob Schenck has done in the past. When he says he invited couples to wine and dine justices, I know of nothing like that that happened.
Why would he lie? And, of course, the fact that he's got one of his, the executive director of the D.C. group that goes in and grubs around on her knees is his employee. And Rob Schenck mentioned in particular Don and Gail Wright of Dayton, Ohio, which gave lots and lots and lots of money to his group. And they're the ones that made it possible to set up an office directly behind the Supreme Court. And they would fly in. And the Wrights funded lots of expensive dinners. It's not like they were going down to the Union Pub around the corner on Massachusetts Avenue from the Supreme Court and just having some fries and maybe some wings and watching a rat the size of a possum run under their table. No, that was Ferg and me. They went to the Capitol Grill instead. Gail Wright ain't talking. She won't answer her phone. And they even, and when Don Wright went off to hell, they even bragged about the fact that he helped Supreme Court justices shit all over their oaths. Because not only did he give to, what is it, Faith and Liberty, he also funded something called the Supreme Court Historical Society. And there were pictures of Don Wright with, hey, look, there he is, old balls and strikes, Chief Justice John Roberts. And pictures of the extended family with Fat Dead Tony and Sammy Bad Breath. And curiously enough, he also went hunting with Fat Dead Tony. Fat Dead Tony loved killing things. In his obituary, it says, "The late Antonin Scalia enjoyed hunting and fishing trips with the Wright family, but whether he was sitting in a hunting cabin with the guys or at a Supreme Court dinner, he was always the same. A filthy theocrat." And it's always the same three names. The Dayton Business Journal said, "As trustee of the Supreme Court Historical Society, Wright became friends with several prominent justices, including Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, and the late Antonin Scalia. An avid hunter-outdoorsman, Wright said Scalia would often accompany the family on hunting trips." You know, it was one of those hunting trips with Richard B. Big-time Dick Cheney before he dicks you. I don't think Wright was with him, but remember, Fat Dead Tony said, it's okay for me to go duck hunting with the Vice President of the United States when he has litigation before me that affects him directly. I'll just rule fairly." I don't think we have any idea whatsoever how broad and deep the corruption on the so-called conservative side of the Supreme Court runs. Every time one of them goes off to speak to a bunch of law students or something, they'll say things like, and Amy, well, the handmaid, never going to use her name again, the handmaid said, "We're not just political hacks." Okay. Sure, handmaid. Sure. And among other things, the right, Mr. and Mrs. Wrong, right, had what Politico calls strongly conservative views on abortion, homosexuality, and gun rights. And they dedicated themselves to reinforcing the Supreme Court justices' own conservative views on the issues. That means they bought them. Supreme Court Historical Society? Really? Like the Supreme Court doesn't have its own history? Like the very essence of the history of the Supreme Court is to be found in the cases reported by the Supreme Court? And yeah, they coached the people that they sent in to talk to these theocratic thugs. And Matt Staver, "I don't know nothing about coaching no justices," suddenly remembered an instance because it had to do with the Historical Society.
"You know, what he did is he would talk to them about protocol. I saw him do that once. He would talk to them about how these are Supreme Court justices, and he actually would say, 'Don't talk about issues or cases. This is just a dinner.' He used it himself to try to get people to contribute to faith and action. Afterwards, he would ask them how they liked it." That's the coaching he's talking about. He wasn't saying he set them up to say this to them or say that to them.
Except the fact that he was saying this to them and saying that to them.
Like, we gotta preserve marriage between one man and one woman and Christian under God. And America ain't got enough guns in it."
And he would do things like go to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, to the Wrights' home there. And when he filed his financial disclosures, he would say that it was paid for by the Wyoming State Bar as part of continuing legal education for lawyers. Kind of makes you think maybe we need to do one of those detailed... Oh, why bother? Why bother, right? Nobody's ever going to dig into this shit because nobody's ever going to have the courage to file a bill of impeachment against any of these punks. Because of course not. Any more than we're ever going to find out actually under sworn testimony who paid for Brat's house. none of our business, right? And we're never going to hear from the multitude of witnesses who talked about what a dirty bastard Brett was to women in high school and college. Why do we need to? Why do we need to know that? We don't have any business knowing like that. That's for people who live in civilized democracies, isn't it? Sure. God, this is infuriating, sickening. So that pretty much gets us to the top of the hour. Sparky, if you don't mind, go ahead and connect. And we will get the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable discussion going. Again, go to headon.live. There's a button there at the top if you'd like to jump into the conversation. We're an hour into the program, and we are still at goose egg for trying to take down our $875 fundraising goal. Kavanaugh gets no quarter, says Matt in San Francisco. If they can rule that women going into Planned Parenthood have to negotiate through a crowd of crazy religious zealots, Brett can have his meal interrupted or skip dessert. I give him no quarter. Oh, yeah, but of course, Morton's of Chicago was outraged. They were outraged. And Ron in Raleigh said, I've been meaning to bring this up. So have I. Recently, the family of Emmett Till has found an unserved warrant for Carolyn Bryant Dunham, the woman who caused the murder of Emmett Till by claiming he had accosted her. She recanted that statement, and then she recanted her recantation. Ms. Dunham is 87 years old and has lived here in Raleigh for many years. No word yet as to whether the warrant will be served. No statute of limitations on murder. No, there isn't. However, there is, I think, there are regulations with regard to the viability of a warrant. And if we can chase down Nazi prison camp guards who are 100 years old, I think it's okay to deal with her, too. Don't you? She's lived a long and happy life. And she's never had to deal with the consequences of what she did to a 15-year-old boy. It seems like maybe it would be more... Well, knowing that there was a warrant and knowing that a judge had in the past found probable cause to issue same. Seems like at the very least the district attorney or maybe the, well, no, not the attorney general of Mississippi, no, what am I thinking? Justice needs to be done. Let's go over and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky, how are you this afternoon?
Just hanging in there, Bob. Staying inside. It's hot out. Just outside.
Yeah, what qualifies as hot out there these days?
Oh, it's in the 90s, but I've been doing a project on the patio. I've been pressure washing.
Concrete or wood?
Concrete and a glass top patio table type thing with a, you know, with a hole in the middle floor, and I'm never use.
So at least you don't have to worry about restaining the deck or anything.
No, it's concrete.
Good. Well, let's see. It's gotten. We've gotten it down to
a little bit nasty. Haven't been cleaned in a couple of years.
Ew. Yeah.
No, nobody uses it, but I just keep walking by it, and I thought, I got to clean that table. It looks disgusting.
Yeah, kind of mildewy and gross.
No, it's just that when it rains, there's a fiberglass roof that goes over the patio. you know, corrugated fiberglass. It's green, that green fiberglass.
Oh, okay.
Where it hooks to the other roof, it's been leaking for years, and the water drips on the table, and then it, when it dries up on the table, then dust gets on the table or something, and it just looked dirty and stuff. And then they had something else on it. I need to see if I could get it clean. It was a ball sconce with a big stem on it. It's a rose ball sconce my wife had.
Yeah.
And if magic you ever redec- what?
Get a magic eraser. There are those things that, like, Mr. Scott, they're a white.
Yeah, Mr. Clean magic erasers. Those things are amazing.
They'll pull off almost any stains. Just be careful. It's got a finish. It'll eat the finish, too, if you push too hard.
No, I use the pressure washer on everything.
Okay.
This wall sconce has like a big long cord on it with it. It turns and stuff. It looks like a stem of a rose. It's got flowers on it and everything, but it was disgusting. I took it out of the shop. It was stored in the shop because I never put it up in this house. It was up in the other house we had when we lived in Reading. And then I got another one that's right still in the box. But we never put it up here. And my neighbors are redecorating my wife's old room someday. We're going to redecorate it. It's got all these wall hangings that have roses on it and stuff. So you're going to call the room the Rose Room. And it's got a single bed in it. So it'd be a guest room, I guess you could say.
Oh, it'll be pretty.
But speaking of Brain.
Yes.
I banned him twice already. Now, I know he was there today. I didn't catch him while he was in there because he makes a hit and run in the chat. But I was able to get his information.
Uh-huh.
Because you know how we ban people. It's by IP address.
Right.
But I don't know if it lasts more than a day or what with that chat room.
Well, and it depends on depends on how he's going about coming in.
Yeah, but I tracked down the IP address, and it's to a T-Mobile phone, and it said Los Angeles on it, but I haven't clicked on the site. It just said, on the address lookup, it just said in Los Angeles, USA, and then under it on the Google page, it just says, is a likely static assigned IP address allocated to T-Mobile USA.
Hmm.
There's also a chance he's hiding behind a VPN, and that creates an address on top of an address. So you're blocking the address it shows, but it's not actually his physical address. Unfortunately, that's the great thing about VPNs. It's also the downfall to security systems. You can get around them. That's why people in China can watch the Disney Channel because of VPNs.
Yeah, well, I have a VPN, but I don't know how it works. Where most of the time, it gives me an IP in Texas when I use it. And I've never checked out who the IP address is assigned to or anything. That's just what I found on the lookup. Steve and I were chatting about it. He thinks he knows who it is, but I don't think it's the person he thinks it is.
Yeah, I saw some of that speculation. Best not to do that. I mean, or best not to, you know, mention it. It's somebody trying to be cute, but I find the Confederate battle flag to be particularly vulgar, hateful. To my mind, it's no different than the flag of the Third Reich. And I don't appreciate having it sent to me in private chats.
Oh.
I recognize no flags but official state flags and the federal government flag, and that's it. There's nothing else for me.
Well, if you send me a Confederate flag, you're sending me a hate symbol. Because I've made myself clear on that.
Well, I agree. I think it's a hate symbol. No questions here.
That's the way I think everybody.
Near the Canadian border, how they fly a Trump flying the Confederate flag. Trust me, I don't like it.
No, I mean, it's particularly odious in a place like Maine or Vermont, you know, when you know the history.
And on a road where it's known to have a history with the Underground Railroad, too. Come on.
Right.
But getting back to that whole idea of murders don't have any length of time they can be held to tried. Couldn't we use that theory on Trump in some way for, say, 200,000 or so deaths?
Yeah, but you'd have to prove. Yeah, but the problem is you'd have to prove all the elements of a murder. And as much as I loathe, detest, and otherwise despise him, it doesn't fit.
There was a theory. I knew it wouldn't fit, but I'm just saying. You'd like to be able to do that, obviously. It seemed like it'd be a slam dunk case, but obviously not.
Just giving you a heads up, I may get a phone call and have to leave.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah, there's some speculation going on. I mean, it could be, you know, it could be somebody who checked out after the, you know, after the Great Purity Wars of 2015. It could in 16. It could be, it could be you know, one of the Steiniacs or something.
Rainbow unicorn sparkle fart gate.
Yeah, the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol.
Okay, I couldn't remember exactly what you had.
The Hillary Clinton is the devil crowd. That's who.
The devil.
The devil. Nobody worse. He killed Jesus herself with her own bare hands with a pitchfork. Oh, well.
That rag you were talking about, the you know, the stars and bars, it's one of the few things that makes me think that I'd like to get a AK-47 or something of that sort and point it out the passenger window and let her rip as I drive by some houses here in mid-Oregon. I won't do it.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
It gives me that feeling. No, it just, the feeling I get inside of me is, okay, fine. You want to go to war? Let's go to war. Of course, I'm too chicken to die, but that's leaving all those other little things apart. But it really frosts me. That's all.
Well, with good reason. And by the way, just a point of really dumb protocol. That thing that, you know, that we call the devil's diaper. And by the way, that was our dear friend, long departed Bruce in Wisconsin's idea, the devil's diaper. He was proud of that. That's actually the Confederate battle flag. The stars and bars is, the flag that flew over Montgomery and Richmond and is actually, it looks somewhat like the American flag. It's got the stars in a circle for the treason states, and then like one red and one white stripe. That's the stars and bars. And of course, it only matters to like the sons and daughters of the Confederacy, which aren't sons and daughters of the Confederacy, because, you know, the real sons and daughters of the Confederacy are all effing dead.
Hey, Robin.
Yeah.
Did you see that story about the assassination of
Shinzo
Abe over there in Japan?
Yeah, Shinzo Abe.
Used a homemade gun.
Yeah, and a homemade shotgun. And I was actually going to get to that, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I wanted to make sure that we talked about it this evening, because, you know, the entire nation of Japan and nations the world over are sickened and horrified by what happened to Shinzo Abe.
Did you see the video?
Yeah, I did.
There's a cloud of smoke that makes you think it was an old musket or something.
Yeah, blunderbuss. Well, basically, it was a blunderbuss. But the whole world is disgusted and horrified by it, and here in the U.S., we're like, what? Because, I mean,
the guy had to make a homemade gun to do it.
Right. And
Robin?
Yes, Scott.
I heard that on the news today that it was a homemade pistol, but it turns out it's like a shotgun. Now, how many man hours or person hours do you think it would take from scratch to craft your own musket, blunderbuss, whatever? What was the guy's beef? I mean, assuming he wasn't just madder than Moses.
Well, in a country like Japan, and I'm speaking speculatively, but that's probably the answer. He was crazier than a sprayed roach.
Well, no, so one of the news people said that made reference to some gripe that he had about Abe, either some position he took or someone he liked, or I mean, it's rooted in madness ultimately. But, I mean, to go to all that trouble and to kill somebody, you know, it's like,
when
what was
out
the
of
point?
Office.
Yeah. He was on a campaign program, rally or whatever, for another candidate.
For somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, Jesus. So it wasn't a kit like we have the kits in this country where you can send in your money and get all the parts that you need, and then you put them together yourself. This was a homemade deal. Is that right? Or
yeah. And by the way, he was a veteran of what we would think of as the Japanese Navy, although they're called the Maritime Self Defense Forces.
Yeah.
That's right. Because there's good reason for that, Scott, because they are not allowed constitutionally to have a standing army or navy, but right. They can have self-defense forces. And so this guy was an old salt.
Jesus. And it's such an out-of-the-ordinary thing in that country, because here you have a modern industrial country who has its head screwed on correctly in regard to guns.
Yeah, that's why they have one a year.
Yeah.
Instead of one every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be even vaguely associated with advancing right-wing talking points here, but the fact of the matter is, we have focused on the slaughter in Highland Park, Illinois, but that entire weekend in, oh my God, Chicago was an abattoir. It was a bloodletting. Because no matter how many gun laws Chicago passes, it ain't that far to Wisconsin, where if you're tall enough to get the money on the counter, you can buy a gun and take it home to old Chicago.
Your porous borders and your irresponsible dealers in neighboring states.
I have not seen one story about Bobby Cremo that mentions the fact that he headed to Wisconsin, where, of course, Kyle Schittenhouse headed, and where Kyle Schittenhouse bought his, had his weapons illegally purchased for him. Strawman purchases are supposed to be illegal, mind you. But nobody's connected those dots.
When you said straw man purchases are supposed to be illegal. I had to pause. That's what that silence was. I took a sip of coffee and laughed quietly within myself. I mean, because they're nothing is changing. I mean, there's too much money in it staying as it is or getting worse. And what do you do about that?
Well, apparently the answer is nothing.
And plenty of it.
And so consequently, you know, like I said, Japan has one murder in 10 years. And they're shocked and horrified and wonder if the culture's falling apart. And we have one of those, what? I mean, really, I'd love to know. If the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department wants to take this on, I would like to know. How many murders per minute, or how many minutes per murder in the United States?
Oh, it's easily done. I mean, how many minutes in a year? How many deaths in a day? How many minutes in a day? How many deaths will it take till we know that too many people have died? I mean,
how many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Don't you go all Bob Dylan on me.
Well, that's why we're trying to ban abortion. We got to keep the body count up of people bringing into this world as much as they're going.
Oh, no. Abortion is a holocaust, Jeremy. It's a plum holocaust.
I know. And guns kill people, not people. Or people kill people, not guns, or whatever the fucking saying is. Same bullshit. Different line, different story.
Yeah. Well, you know. When AR-15s are outlawed, only outlaws will have AR-15s, which is fine by me. Outlaw the damn things, and if you're caught with one, boom, life, done.
And I've always liked the argument that, well, someone can kill you with a knife. I said, yeah, I'd rather fight a knife than I would a bullet. At least a knife has a standing chance of loss.
Well, yeah, and you know, I don't... you know, when you think about Uvalde, I don't think he could have taken out 19 fourth graders... with a knife. The horror would have been equally awful, but it wouldn't have been 19 times the horror. And I don't know, maybe a grown-up, a teacher, could have taken him down. You know, we did have that story out of Alabama, remember, from a couple of weeks ago, where the guy with the federal firearms license attacked an Episcopal church in Vestavia Hills, Alabama. And a good guy with a folding chair took out the gunman. But the gunman was using a pistol and not an AR-15. That's the only reason.
Approximately 27.6 minutes per murder in the United States.
That's
one every half hour.
Yeah, as opposed to one every... I mean, and the thing we need to remember is Japan has an organized crime problem. The Yakuza. And they are some mean bastards.
What was that Sean Connery movie about the Japanese? Do you remember that? I think Wesley Snipes was in it also, or...
Yeah, yeah. Well, and recently there's been a show on HBO Max that Ken Watanabe is in it. He's a fantastic actor. He looks like a Japanese version of Gregory Peck. Oh, he's a handsome guy. But Tokyo 911 or something like that. Here, let me look. Now I got to find.
This is an out-of-the-box way of thinking about this, but they said, well, we have 300 mass murders so far. Just imagine if you had a space big enough, which you could make a huge circle. We're talking 360 degrees of all those people. You've almost filled that circle in mass shootings alone and the numbers of mass shootings.
Oh, and by the way, the name of the show is Tokyo Vice.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really quite good. And... Interestingly, one of the plot devices, I don't want to give it, I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it's based on a true story. It's set in the 90s, and it's about an American journalist who becomes the first American to work for a Japanese newspaper, and he works the crime beat. And one of the things that he uncovers that organized crime was up to, and let's just put it this way, it was an organized crime thing in Japan, and yet at the same time, back years ago, it is the exact same thing that Walmart was doing with its workers, deemed at the time perfectly legal. How about that?
I don't follow.
Well, I'm trying not to give a spoiler, Scott. Work with me
here. All right.
What was an organized crime criminal operation in Japan was a perfectly legal corporate business strategy at the same time in the United States for Walmart.
Nepotism.
Is that clear now?
I don't know. I'm a little slow today. I'll figure it out.
Walmart and the Yakuza were doing the same thing. It was a crime in Japan. It was good business in America.
Come into a town, open up a store.
No, don't guess at it, Roger. No, it has nothing to do with that. But the bottom line is, when I started watching this program, I wondered who, because they're basically contemporaneous. The idea is they were both doing the same thing at the same time. And I'm wondering, did the Yakuza learn from Walmart, or did Walmart learn from the Yakuza?
Well, I'm going to add it to my list now because I've got to fill in those blanks.
Well, here's a bit of Walmart trivia for you. In calculus, there's something known as the first derivative and the second derivative. And the first derivative is how steep the slope is, either going up or down. And the second derivative is how fast that slope is changing. Now, old man Sam kept very tight control on his inventories. And if he brought something into the store and started selling good, he'd keep buying it until he realized that the amount that were being sold per day per store, even though it was still going up, it wasn't going up as fast. He would cut back, and he worked out in his own way that when the demand went to zero, he didn't have any more of the item on the shelf. And old man Sam had no knowledge of calculus. But his strategy that he created in how to deal with stocking the shelves in his stores was actually using, in calculus terms, the second derivative of the demand curve of the goods.
And he knew it intuitively after analyzing
how Sam managed to do it intuitively when mathematics was applied to it. Old man Sam had discovered the second derivative and how to apply it to a business model. And now it's a common business practice.
Yeah, and somewhere along in there, Roger, is Robin's corollary, which is the minute they get something in that I like, they will never reorder it again.
So you're just buying it too late in the demand curve.
Why do they do that?
Well, Scott, let me try this. If I have a widget and I bring it into the store, and everybody loves it, but you only need one of them, at some point the demand for that widget is going to taper off. Now, if I don't like to have inventory on the shelf that I bought or have borrowed money and have to pay interest on it, I want to sell the last widget to the last person that needs it. I don't want to have 500 of them on the shelf when nobody wants to buy them anymore.
Well, that's where marketing comes in. If it's a one-time purchase, your universal widget will last a lifetime, usually. That's where you throw in the moment of doubt. You do your commercial along the lines of, These widgets are reliable, most people say, but you never know. Life's funny that way. Get you a backup widget just in case. You know?
Well, that's when you have too much on your inventory and you're trying to push the last ones out of the store.
And is this where that and you know, we've been bitten in the ass by it over the course of the pandemic. Is this where that just in time logistics comes in?
Very much so.
Yeah, because they
right. Well,
you go ahead,
no,
Roger.
It's not.
The
just in time is years ago, corporations, businesses, mom and pop stores would shut down on one day in February or something and take inventory, and they got taxed on the inventory they had on their shelf as a property tax. If you were dealing with it, and then they've changed it now with computers and all the rest of that stuff, you don't do the inventory quite that way. But if in your store you can simply order what was sold that day and get your shelves restocked for the next day overnight, you no longer have to have warehouse space in the back of the store to store the stuff, nor do you have it on your books as an inventory to put out. If you look at your grocery stores today, I know I'm an old fart, they used to have about a quarter to a third of their store as storage, the backup, and the truck would come in once a week or something, and they'd fill up the back of the store, and then they would bring it out of the back of the store and put it on the shelf to sell. With today's transportation and everything, they can have one giant warehouse in a regionally located area, and with the cash registers, the store knows exactly what they sold today. At the end of the day or at noon today or something, they can compile all that data, send it off to the main warehouse. They create the order list for the trucks. The trucks get loaded. They get delivered at midnight, and then the store can put it on the shelf by 8 o'clock the next morning to restock the shelves.
Yeah,
that is the
just-in-time. Really.
Yeah, but that's the just-in-time marketing. Now, when the corporation can consolidate that a little bit better and deal with the warehouse, they're only needing to keep 1 or 2 days in the warehouse at most. And then they can order for the ship coming over from China or wherever the hell it is and bring it into the warehouse also just in time. And this allows them to have more money in their bank account to get interest rather than having the goods sitting in the back room waiting to be put on the shelf.
But not part of the equation, we found out, was what if something really globally bad happens and throws a wrench into the finely tuned mechanism? And
well,
I don't know if we're recovered yet from that part of the distribution system. I mean, if anything, it shows us how vulnerable we are to a major hiccup.
Well, look at the mask shortage early in the pandemic.
And toilet paper.
We didn't have any masks. We didn't have any masks in the warehouse. We didn't have toilet paper in the back room.
Well, and I mean, look at the formula shortage was a multiple of factors, and we're still dealing with them. But you know, part of it was that skeevy production facility for Abbott Labs up in Michigan. But another part of it was, oddly enough, just human purchasing behavior. Because people stockpiled it during the pandemic, baby formula, and then they had plenty, so they weren't buying it. So the production got, you know, the computers lowered the production model.
Well, the serious problem with the baby formula is virtually every can of goods you buy or package or whatever has a best buy date on it. And that doesn't mean it's expired. It just means that that's the best nutrition and best flavor. I mean, a can of cream of mushroom soup will last 50 years if you keep it properly stored. But baby formula is one of those things, and one of the only things, that you should use it by the best buy date, because a lot of the proteins that are in that baby formula do begin to deteriorate. And it's
I can imagine that they do, yeah.
As an adult, if the protein in a can of cream mushroom soup deteriorates a little bit, but it still tastes good, who gives a shit? You know, it's
yeah, but that can yeah, but that can wreck a wreck a baby.
Yeah,
but it can wreck a baby. So if you are ignoring best buy dates, which is a customary thing to do because there's no sense in tossing out a jar of pickles that expired 2 days ago, with baby formula, yep. Toss it and get a new one, because it could really fuck up your baby.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised. As a matter of fact, I opened a bar of soap because I'm really and I know our buddy Todd is the same, because we talked about it at one point. It's called Kirk's Castile Soap. Really gentle, makes a great soap, makes a great lather. It's just good stuff. And so I like to keep one, keep a bar in the a bar in the shower and a bar on the bathroom sink. Well, I used the previous bar down to the point that it literally the last little shard of it dissolved in my hands. So
you shave your legs with it.
No, I use the Aveeno stuff for that.
The edge of the when the bar is.
You can shave your legs with the shard of the soap, exactly right. But I went to open a new bar of soap, and lo and behold, there was a best buy date on the soap. I had no idea. This soap is best used on or before March of 2027. I'm pretty sure we'll go through it before then, but damn. I mean, if you're one of these doomsday preppers, I mean, it sort of throws things into chaos.
But that's kind of like getting a best buy date on a container of salt. I
mean, what's the point?
Salt is a mineral, and it's millions of years old, and they put it in a package and put a best buy date on it. I mean, Castile soap, it probably means it's going to dry out some and won't disappear as fast when you're using it, so they want you to use it while it's still nice and soft so it dissipates quickly.
And
that
knows?
Was a trick.
I mean,
a while back, things like Ivory soap and all that, if you wanted them to last a little bit longer, you take them out of the package, put them on the shelf so they can dry out some. And that way you won't be rubbing off quite as much each time you use it. And the bar of soap will last longer because you've hardened it. Well, they don't want you to harden it. They want you to use the soap and have it dissipate quicker. Now, Best Buy dates are bullshit for the most part.
And what is it with milk milk products? It's still good 7 days. It's still supposed to remain good 7 days after the best buy date.
Yeah, the best buy date on milk is intended to be the day you can take it home from. It's a pull date on milk.
Yeah,
the grocer should pull it off the shelf because it will no longer last the 7 days in the home refrigerator, 7 to 10.
Well, that's why I got into that Fairlife milk, Robin.
Exactly. I was about to say the same thing.
Any other milk. I won't drink any other milk than that. I like the fact that I like the container. I like the fact that it seems to have a longer life. You know, I haven't looked at the carton lately to find out how far into the future the shelf life goes, and doesn't it have extra goodies in it, like one brand of it?
Among other things, and I don't know I don't understand how it can taste this good and be lactose free.
Yeah,
but it's got the omega-3 fatty acids are boosted. It's a higher protein and mineral content, and it just tastes fantastic.
I still personally like Jerry Seinfeld's theory on how they get the exact date. The farmer looks at the cow, and the cow goes, shh.
No. Okay. Yeah. And I've noticed, because I'm buying more of it, the Best Buy date on just a jug of milk is X. It's 2X for half and half, and like 4X for heavy cream. God, we are so far in the damn weeds. Let's wander back into some reality. A little background on the assassination of Shinzo Abe. And it's worth remembering there was a brilliant Japanese novelist. I've read a bunch of his stuff. He's most famous for a book called The Sailor Who Fell from Grace with the Sea. And back in the 70s, I guess he had a fascist streak or was concerned about the Americanization of Japan or something. And he organized a coup and attacked the government. And then when it failed, he went out in the yard or sat down on the floor or something and committed ritual suicide. That was the 70s. And God, he was a great writer. They made the man who fell, the sailor who fell from grace with the sea, into a movie, and it's not a bad flick. But in regard to Shinzo Abe, Ron and Raleigh says the man that killed Mr. Abe had been in the Defense Force, the Maritime Self-Defense Force. Mr. Abe wanted to remove Section 9 of the American written Constitution, because remember, we wrote the Japanese Constitution, which disallows Japan from having a standing army. It appears that the shooter disagreed with Mr. Abe's position. Mr. Abe was considered the Trump of Japan. I didn't realize that. I guess he did golf with Trump, didn't he? On a separate note, the Yakuza have guns, but so as not to run afoul of the gun laws, they prefer swords and knives. And, for instance, you know, it's legendary, I guess, that when you're a member of the Yakuza and you fuck up, you have to cut off the end of your own finger to prove that you've learned your lesson and you're still loyal.
Texting rather painful.
And there are, again, in that Tokyo Vice series, there are some beautifully, because the Yakuza are all into body art. And
is it Tokyo Vice or Tokyo 911?
No, it's Tokyo Vice.
All right.
I mean, if you go to HBO Max and you just type in Tokyo, it's going to pop.
By the way, that's a movie that I couldn't remember the title of, with Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes and Harvey Keitel, Rising Sun.
Rising Sun, right, yeah.
By the way, the Yakuza and the ninjas never use throwing stars. It's a Hollywood fabrication.
Yep. Yeah, that's just junk. And curiously enough, the film named Ronin, on the other hand, has absolutely nothing to do. It's named after it's the word for a Japanese for a samurai who has no master. But if you've never seen Ronin, it has nothing to do with Japan. It's Robert De Niro and Sean Bean. You know, all-star cast, really long movie, set in France, absolutely a great crime thriller. Yeah.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think in Japanese culture, tattoos are considered low-life type things. Only criminals in the mafia actually have them. That's how you know a lot of times.
Yeah, but it's beautiful body art. It's amazing.
Speaking of movies, and I meant to ask you this the last couple of times I've called in, I don't get to listen every day, so maybe you already mentioned it. But what about that movie that I sent you a couple of weeks ago? Have you gotten a chance to see it yet?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic! It's fabulous.
Isn't that a wonderful movie?
It's a beautiful. Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a beautiful film.
I think everybody should see it. It's called A Thousand Clowns. Jason Robards, Barbara Harris, Barry Gordon, Martin Balsam, William Daniel. Oh, it's a spectacular. It's not a morality. Well, it is a morality play in the sense that it gets people to question their day-to-day routine and if it's working for them. And I think more of us could stand to do that. You know?
Well, I think you're right. Yeah, no spoilers. I mean, it's an old movie, but, you know. But it is—it's—it's a—it's a fantastic film. Let me finish off with Ron and Raleigh's note. Just-in-time logistics is bullshit. It's never just-in-time. Go to Walmart and see how many shelves and displays are empty. And added to this, I remember when Paul from Parts Unknown was on the phone, and he said, yeah, where I work, we call just-in-time. It's never fucking there.
Yeah.
If you need it, it's never fucking there. And I would love to have an answer. And I've actually been digging around because, you know, going all the way back to when we had the story about Marjorie, marginal trader queen, gabbling about the tampon shortage. I'd love to know why there is one. I mean, is that another case of hoarding during the pandemic catching up? I don't know. And you know, this actually has a rather significant impact on my life. I would like to know why Pfizer Pharmaceuticals has stopped manufacturing injectable estrogen and says that they're not going to start back up manufacturing it until December. Because I mean, that has, you know, not just trans women, but it has real world consequences for cis women too. Because it works better than pills, and it works better than patches, and it works better than anything else.
I must have been napping back when she was going on about tampons. What brought that up? What was her? Did she blame Biden for it, or?
Well, no. I guess indirectly, you could say that she blamed Biden. She said that the reason that there is a tampon shortage is they're putting tampon dispensers in men's restrooms now.
Oh fuck me.
It's not often I get an immediate response like that. You know, you're not one of those to just run out there and go, "Oh fuck me, dead."
No, I'm not going to ruminate.
Is this gangrene you're talking about?
I'm sorry, what?
Is this gangrene you're talking about?
Yeah. Marginal trailer queen.
Yeah, she was also on Alex Jones this week.
I ran that clip.
You should be president. You're smarter than everyone. You're smarter than Pence, Trump, all of them.
You're the smartest person in the world.
Yeah, you're smarter than all those people. You can meet them all. We need you, someone like you, who's bold and strong and brave to say what she thinks and does what she means or some shit like that.
Where were the guys in the white coats with the big van that's padded and the nets? If they knew where she was going to be with old Alex, they could have done a little guy in white coats roundup and take him in for what, Robin? For regrooving.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're back to the regrooving again.
This may not be a popular opinion, but I don't think she's dumb as she plays. She's an idiot whisperer. She knows their language. She plays on what they do to get money. That's all it is. But she's dangerous in doing so.
I would be curious to know what sort of... the last time I read a statistic, the members of the House of Representatives, it's not exact, but it works out to about 700, is it 700 or 900,000 constituents, theoretically, in each district
of the U.S. 735,000. 735 to 750.
All right. Well, I mean, I would like to do an analysis of the people in her district and find out what sort of turnout she got to put her in a place of well, I was going to say esteem, but I know that's not the right word.
Going all the way back, the way that she got into office is there was a Republican incumbent who stepped down in the, what is it, 14th District of Georgia, where's Steve when I need him? And then there was like a doctor or something who was going to run in the primary against her, and her goons came out, her maggot goons, and threatened him enough to make him say, you know, it's not worth it. I don't want the job badly enough to have these freaks burn my house down. And so that left her unopposed in the primary, and in that district where she lives, it left her unopposed, for all intents and purposes, in the general, and boom, into Congress she went. And this time through, I think she actually got more votes in the Republican primary this time through than she did in the last one.
Jesus.
I mean, there are people in that district, apparently, who are down, I mean, stone cold down with that level of stupid. And just to wrap up with Ron and Raleigh, P.S. The American written Japanese constitution is the reason Japanese porn has mosaic pixelation covering the genitals. And adds, always buy milk in opaque containers. Sunlight causes milk to go bad. Opaque containers last much longer. The Fairlife comes in an opaque plastic container. I wish it wasn't plastic. But then again, it doesn't go bad very long. It takes a long time to go bad.
The nice thing about plastic is you can clean out the container after you've used all the milk, cut the top two-thirds of the container off, and use it for a little planting for your seedlings or whatever. I mean, if you've got a green thumb, if your talents lean in that direction.
Seedlings. Little green seedlings. The password is seedlings. By the way, Kim in New York reminds us, hey, Kim, Abe had feet of clay. Among other things, he failed to apologize for Japan's brutal atrocities committed during the rape of Nanking. Well, that sounds like a very Trumpian thing not to do. It's more than overdue. And Tom in sunny San Rafael says, an alternate spelling for just in time is backordered.
Yeah, it's on back order.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And Lady B says, I can't profess to knowing much about Japanese culture, but if they manage to ban civilian possession of firearms, they take crime very seriously. I think there's going to be a lot of campaigning about how America is trying to spread its poison over to Japan. I can see the rise of extremism everywhere. We're not the sole cause of it, but we damn sure did contribute to it. And, yeah, she reminds us the movie was called Rising Sun.
Speaking of backordered, do you remember a couple of months ago we got to talking about the bean soup that they serve in the
Senate Navy bean soup.
And I ordered me a case of it, 12, 16-ounce cans, and just thoroughly enjoyed it. And I went back to get it, and it's not on Amazon anymore.
It's Robin's corollary only applied from Walmart to Amazon. If I like it, it's gone.
And I searched around. Walmart said they had it, except the website said, no, we don't actually have it. I found a place up in New England, a mom-and-pop old-time general store, who said they had it. And I sent the guy an email. No sign of it. Can't get it. And I said, well, are they still making it? And he said, well, let me contact them, and I'll send you an email back when I find out. And that was 3 weeks ago. And it pissed me the hell off because...
Yeah, Pepperidge Farm does not remember.
That's some fine navy bean soup, neighbor. You know? And not that I need more gas, but it was good. Hearty. I think I even ate it at the dining room on a field trip to the Capitol. We had a bowl of that. And we were something on the bus coming back, I'll tell you that.
I've had it, and it's damn good.
Isn't it? It's probably even better in the cafeteria. You know,
it is. I mean, with a hunk of cornbread, heavenly days.
But for a canned soup product, I mean, and I'll probably never get it again. I mean, I'll have to find someone. I even went so far as to look in the D.C. area, where I still have some relatives who speak to me, to find out, because I knew they used to sell it on the Giant Food and Safeway or whatever that is nowadays, that you could actually walk in a store and buy it. Giant doesn't even have it. So I'm
on the other side of the equation, we've had a little miracle here. I've been trying to get caffeine free Coke Zero for eons.
I know.
And I walked into the Wiggling Pig the other day, and what to my wondering eyes did appear? And there were like several 12 packs. And I remained calm, and just bought one, and brought it home. And, you know, I drink one every two or three days because I like it, because it almost tastes like Coke. You know, of course, they're really special up there at the Wiggling Pig because, among other things, it only took my buddy like 3-4 years. But this is the only grocery store in West Virginia where you can buy a package of Kaneka sausage.
And yeah, that's good customer service. He went the extra mile.
Yeah, and Kroger and Walmart and Food Lion, they were like, yeah, too bad for you. Sucks, right?
Yeah.
And on the but on the other hand, he was like, I will find it. And I said, well, if you do, I will become the evangelist of Kaneka sausage. And I have. Anytime I see somebody walking around, I'm like, have you tried this? Don't try this unless you're willing to have your sausage world changed.
Have you had your Kaneka today?
And so, you know, Roger has had Kaneka, and David in San Diego has tried Kaneka. And it really is as special as I say it is. It's not like a kielbasa. It's not like a so-called, you know, an Eckrich Farms or whatever smokes. This is entire. Kaneka is entirely sui generis. And it's even better when it's even better when you can get the other styles. They've managed to get in the regular and the hot and spicy, and that's a nice start. I prefer it.
Is it only made in certain regions?
No, it's only made in one place.
Oh well, that would be a certain region.
Yeah, but you pluralized it. You said certain regions.
Oh, I'm sorry. Now I want some, and I know I'll never find it out here.
Yeah, it comes from Evergreen, Alabama. Actually, it's probably available at the San Diego Naval Base.
Well, I'm not going to join the Navy just for a sausage experience. I mean, can you see me in the Navy? Jeez. I don't.
Hey, by the way, that sounds like Precious Lindsay's Disneyland Sausage World.
Sausage or us.
Well, you know,
sausage
there's
and you.
There is that 60-minute interview he did with Leslie Stahl a few years ago where he seemed to rack balls all night long in his dad's pool house. So,
whoa, what? I missed that one.
Lindsay's dad used to own a bar, kind of like whatever his face, or a pool house or something like that. And one of the clips they took from it was Lindsay talked about how he'd rack balls all night long. And they just clipped that out of the interview. You know, pool balls, of course, but
yeah, of course.
You know what the content is, obviously, yes. But that's a famous clip out there now.
How's everybody doing this wonderful Friday?
Trying to stay out of the gutter, but we're slowly getting there.
Staying cool.
Yeah. Nice.
Musk dropped Twitter.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
He's not going to buy it?
He canceled the transaction. He didn't want to do it anymore.
Can he do it anymore? Well, he still is the richest guy in the world, right? But Tesla...
He'll probably catch fire after he owned it anyway. Yeah.
Has Tesla's stock rebounded? I'm seeing more and more Teslas on the road. Maybe because the maggots are all buying them now. I don't know.
Crickets.
Yeah.
Did we lose? Did we lose Robin? It seems like she's disappeared.
Yeah. What happened?
Yeah, I think she's gone.
I think she's looking something up.
Still here, maybe.
Bite.
Understood. Sorry about that. No, I was there all along. I just there was another call came through about the rally for women's reproductive rights tomorrow in Charleston.
Now, how long of a drive is that for you, Robin?
Oh, it's just oh, hey, Chris. It's just down the mountain. It's about an hour. But given what's going on, it's about an hour from here to there. It's 34 miles as the crow flies. But crows don't follow winding two-lane roads down mountains. It's about an hour, depending, and then every now and then the mountains slides down into the road, and there can be holdups that way. So I'm going to leave 2 hours early, and that gives me time to park and probably hike to the Capitol. It's all taking place on the Kanawha River side of the Capitol, up these big, broad Capitol steps. So, that I think 2 hours should be ample time. So that means leaving at noon.
And I really hope there's a huge turnout.
I hope so, too. I hope it's not just... but that was one of my gal pals calling to say that she's coming, and she's bringing some folks. and that she's got a friend who's making T-shirts. And so I'm going to have a T-shirt that says, from the moment of fertilization, a woman has no rights to speak of the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Unreal.
Don't forget to keep an eye on fire escapes now. That's your new terror slot.
Oh, shush. Yeah, I know. And I don't know what kind of security is going to be there, but we can, you know, we cannot be ruled by fear. And I've been to enough of these things. I've showed up for anti-mountaintop removal protests, and you know, the coal company would pay the freaks to show up and bring their Harleys and gun their engines and try to drown us out, unplug our microphones. I've been down this road. And you just, if you believe in the issue, you go and devil take the hindmost. And you know, I've never believed in an issue more in my life than this.
Example, there's a famous story from back when the Westboro Baptist Church was doing their BS when they're a power family, and at one of the rallies, the Hell's Angels had encircled a funeral for a soldier because they were using their whole, you know, God hates blah blah blah, and that's why we're doing this. And that's why soldiers are dying. Well, one of the Hell's Angels ran over and tackled Fred Phelps in front of the police and beat the living hell out of him. And the police looked at him when Fred Phelps said, "I want to sue this guy." They said, "You're on your own." They walked away.
Oh, good.
We don't see that kind of stuff anymore. As bad as the Hell's Angels are, they're known as an outlaw Baker Den. They had the right, I hate to say they did the right thing at that time. They really did. And I'm not a violent person, but I wholeheartedly agree with that.
That guy was one atrocious son of a bitch.
Anyhow, Robin. Back when I was, brain got zapped again. Back when I was in with you in back east, I made the comment on the idea that fog seemed to be different.
Yeah.
In West Virginia than it was on the West Coast. So I've just posted two pictures of fog in the Pacific Northwest, Humboldt County to be specific.
Those are beautiful.
One of them, the top one is sort of in the Redwood Forest. And the bottom one is like if you're coming across 299 from Sparky's house toward the coast, and you get up on top of the hill and you look down into the valleys, that's what you'll see in the valleys. And frequently the fog is such a thing. There was one time I took Mom and Dad to the airport, and there was a partial eclipse of the sun. And I got myself deep enough in the fog to where you could look through the fog, and the sun was just a disc with a piece cut out of it. And it was only like a 25%, which is one of those that you can't really look up at the sun and see it's only 25%. But in the fog, it blocked enough of the light to where the sun normally would just be a disc with, you know, at the lower you go and you get down to the bottom, you can't see the sun at all. It's just a gray light. I mean, the whole sky is just gray light. You can't see where the sun is. But that kind of fog is just, it just was so different from what I saw in West Virginia. And with my time schedule, your time schedule, and the Supreme Court schedule and all the rest of that shit, I hadn't been able to bring up the topic of fog on the porch. So I'm taking this opportunity today because there's nothing burning the forest down urgent that is taking up all the time.
Well, those are gorgeous. Those are gorgeous photos. And you know, did you get a chance to go across the bridge in the early morning hours, Roger?
No.
That's a fog to behold because, I mean, that's every day. Because basically the river is literally rising into the sky, and the fog takes the same shape as the course of the river. It's magnificent.
Well, Roger, I have a question about fog.
Yeah.
I noticed this the other day, a couple of weeks ago. It was early in the morning. I went to put some nuts out for the squirrel, and it was foggy. I mean, really nice piece of fog. What is with the aroma of fog? Everywhere I've ever lived, there's a distinct smell associated with fog. And where does that come from, and why is it
It may not be the same everywhere, just the places I've lived.
It's different wherever you are. In the San Joaquin, Sacramento Valley, where you've got irrigated fields and you'll get the tule fog, it'll smell like agriculture. Where I lived in Humboldt County, it smells like the ocean.
Hmm.
I mean, what you've got are very small water particles suspended in the air. I mean, you're at 100% humidity with the fog. And those little droplets of water, which are what make fog, have impurities. And whatever the mist that makes the fog, you're smelling the impurities in the water of what you're breathing.
I didn't think about you may have a point there. You do have a point there.
I have seen fog so thick that driving down the road, I could not see. I mean, in Humboldt County, we call it the fog line, the line on the right-hand side of the road. Theoretically, it's there so you can drive over on the right-hand side, stay close to the, quote, fog line, and that way you know you're safe. But in a car or in a big truck, it's even worse. I've been in fog so thick that in a big truck you can see, and I'm speaking of the top picture that I posted there, you cannot see either one of those lines.
Oh, wow.
In a truck.
Oh,
It does that here, too. I was one time driving over in the valley in a big truck, and all I could see, well, the fog was so thick and so close to the ground, I was above the fog and could see a truck ahead of me, but I knew there were cars between me and the truck ahead of me, but I couldn't see any of the cars. And I simply, the first exit I could find, I pulled over because I wasn't going to be driving down the road, not being able to see the cars that were on the road, and I was above the fog.
Well, I haven't had the TV on to see, you know, watch the thing crawling across the bottom of the screen. Have there been any leaks as to what's-his-name said today, Patty C., in the closed-door session, or? It's the last
he was said to be cooperative and helpful in a limited capacity.
So lots of no-go questions.
No Fifth Amendment. No Fifth Amendment declarations.
True. And let's see. By the way, I haven't mentioned it. We are into the third hour of the program, and I really don't want us to have an $1,100 fundraising, $1,175 fundraising hole come Monday. We're at $875. We got an early jump before airtime. It's been a goose egg so far, and that puts that, you know, we exist literally day to day, week to week, month to month. And if we could get if we could knock that down, however much, but it would be great if we could knock down a sizable chunk of it. And we really need the help because. I've been paying bills to a fairly well, but there are a couple, you know, there's two or three out there that are serious and, well, immediate. So if you'd like to help, run over to the PayPal button, and it would be immensely, immensely appreciated. Just saying. And I'm opening a story here that, well, you know, there's that thing, situational awareness. And what I mean by that is the headline, Annette just sent this to me. Armed demonstrators and far-right groups are escalating tensions at abortion protests. The date on this story is today. 8 abortion-related demonstrations featured armed individuals in the week after the June 24th ruling, bringing the total number of such protests in 2022 to 10. Nearly twice as many as in all of 2021. Jesus. I hope we don't have to deal with that. But like I said, I've seen that kind of shit before. Of course, the coal companies would give a paid day off to their workers to come and harass us. Thank you. Hey, thank you so much for getting us started, Ralphs, and getting the goose egg out of the way. Thank you so much. And hopefully you'll have a lot of company, Ralphs, and we'll get this. You know, if we could fund Wednesday and Thursday, that would be 565. No, yeah, 565. That would be great.
Your curiosity, Rob.
Yeah, Jeremy.
Robin, have you spoken to Malay in the last couple of days? Is he on the mend from his bout with?
Yeah, I mentioned that. You may not have gotten into the program by then, but I've been talking to Malloy on a daily basis, and he's sounding much better. He said. The main thing, and that's why Tara and I are filling in for him this evening. He sounds almost back to normal, but the lingering cough that COVID brings is, it sucks. And he wanted to have another couple of days to try to get past it. So
obviously we're all concerned with a lingering age, so that doesn't help either. But.
Well, yeah, and Mike just celebrated a birthday and got COVID for his birthday. Gee, thanks, right? Thanks, Steve, for sending this along. The BA5 version, BA.5, of COVID-19 has become the majority variant of the virus in the United States in a matter of weeks, and it is, to say the least, troubling, and we're not dealing with it at all. Jason Salemi, quoted by the Guardian article, an associate professor of epidemiology at the University of South Florida's College of Public Health, says COVID-19 is very clearly not over. We're seeing dramatic increases in the number of cases and hospitalizations in many places throughout the United States. So I'm taking my mask with me tomorrow. You're damn right I'm taking my mask with me.
And apparently the current vaccination, the current recipe, doesn't include is it the BA4 and the BA5, or that's one of them is worse in terms of symptoms and in terms of how quickly it affects you and how easily it infects you, is what I read. And apparently the current vaccines that you can get, the current threat is not addressed by the current vaccines. And that's
well, and one of the things Tullier de Oliveira with the Center for Epidemic Response and Innovation at Stellenbosch University in South Africa said BA4 and 5 are potentially the variants that can break through immunity the easiest.
Yeah.
Well, that's just fucking fabulous.
And what would have happened if a year and a half, even 2 years ago, people had done the responsible thing and masked up and social distanced and done the responsible thing and been like grown-ups? I can dream, I guess. We likely wouldn't be in this current situation because the nature of viruses is to mutate. Whenever you, it's like whack-a-mole, isn't it? I mean, you knock one of them down and it pops up in a different formation over the upper right-hand corner of the game table. So who do we have to, quote, thank in this? We have the people who from word go decided not to be responsible and grown-ups about it and listen to their tangerine-tinted turd blossom. And here we are. Didn't nip it when we had a chance.
Yeah, I mean,
it'll be gone by spring.
Jesus, they should put that on his tombstone when the day finally comes.
It'll be gone by spring. It's like the flu.
Yeah, but Scott, my body, my choice. Isn't that what it says on Herman Cain's tombstone?
Now,
all I know.
Yeah, no, Herb's tombstone says, I told you I was sick, 999.
Yeah,
One week you're at a Trump rally whooping and hollering and having a grand old time, and the next week you're all, oh, I don't know, dead-like. I mean, that's him in a nutshell.
One day you're running a massive gas station pizza empire, and the next minute you're catching a terminal virus at a rally in Tulsa.
The only thing I wonder is, did he taste better to the worms than his pizza does?
Well, okay, there went dinner in the mountain daylight time zone. Thanks, Chris.
No, he actually found out. It turns out that 999 was upside down backwards. It's actually 666.
Ah, well played. Well played. And by the way, Ralph says she will chip in another $10 if somebody else has $10 to put into the pot. So we are down, you know, we're down to $8.65. God, it would be great to get further down than that. So Ralph's is willing to double you. And remember, new subscriber challenge, courtesy of Zed. Five new subscribers, if we can find them, if they're out there. $10 a month, less than half a stick of gum per program. Jeez, really. Hell, you probably can't get a chicken McNugget for that, for what you help out with in terms of each show with a $10 subscription. But Zed's going to double the five subscribers this month, and hopefully they're out there. So thank you in advance. Sorry, and again, the usual apology.
Well, I'm just curious about two things, Robin. One thing I'm curious about is I just happened to notice on my little device here that there's only like four of us speaking in this little venue. Where'd everybody go?
Yeah, it's a quiet evening. I don't know.
Is there a holiday I'm not aware of? Or?
No, people are probably just exhausted from the horror of the week.
Well, and not only that, but it's... You know, I use the example of Sisyphus and trying to get that rock up the hill every week. And it's like, it's an easier lift if we each take a little piece of the rock, so to speak. And I don't know what to do about it. That's what pisses me off. I mean, you can't. No, really
believe me, I get it.
You can't let the responsibility for the care and upkeep and the continuation of the program to fall on, you know, a limited number of people. If you're getting anything out of it, which I'm sure you are, you know, kick in a couple of bucks if you can. Don't do anything that you can't do. But to the extent that it's possible for you to kick in something. And it's funny, when you put stuff out to the universe, when you... And I don't want to make it sound all cosmic and mystical and religious or whatever, but there is a principle involved. When you let go of something, that empties that hand to receive later on down the road, and you always get more back than you put out. And I don't know if there's, I mean, again, it's cosmic, it's karmic, it's whatever, but I have found it in my life to be true. And it's a magnificent thing. I mean, to realize that you're part of something that's ongoing and doable, but the key part of doability is doing it, doing something in that's consistent with the outcome you want to see.
Yeah, and without, you know, without moving over into, you know, Oral Roberts seed faith territory, we're not selling anything here.
No, and I don't think it's that, really. It's just a thing of, you know, obviously people tune into this program. Obviously they've been doing it for a number of years, and obviously they wouldn't do it unless they were getting benefit from it. But benefit is not a one-way street. It'd be like an audience after a concert sitting stone cold still and not applauding, not even the one guy clapping at the end of laughing. Back in the day, you know, the conversations are great, the emails are great, the giving needs a little work. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, I tell you what, I got huge thanks to send out to Stephen. And thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy met Ralph's challenge. And then Stephen stepped in and did have a show on me.
All right.
So Thursday's taken care of. Yesterday is taken care of. And so that means we've got two 45 from Wednesday and today. So we're at 545 to finish the week. Stephen, thank you so much. Thank you.
I know times are rough, but it does seem in the last few months that the ebb and flow of the program's funds has slowed down a bit to the point where we end up in these.
Lassie, go for the sheriff. She's down the well again. It's like wells around here. I can't take a step without winding up in a well.
And I'm sure it has to do with because people feel down their luck because we had two no-go voters for the last 2 years who blocked everything that Biden wanted to do. It would have done except for probably those two on most circumstances. And I get that. But in the past, we didn't seem to have a system here where people would step up and help fill those gaps when other people couldn't. There's a long time when I couldn't, and I specified the day I could, I would. And for the full first year of COVID, I stepped up because I had that money. Times have changed. I don't have that kind of money anymore. I've backed off. But I said I'd do it, and I did it for a year. I wish other people could take that same initiative and go for it. It would help out a lot.
Well, I think, you know, like Scott has said many times, we need quantity. We need more people who are listening to the show to throw $5, $10. That's all it takes.
Precisely.
And Robin, I think it's now a lot easier for you to fall down the well with those heels on.
What happens is the closer I get to the well, one heel will sink in the mud, and I'll stumble, and I go face first. And so it's not like I'm just in the – I come out of the well a total mess, Chris.
And that wasn't meant to guilt anybody. It was just a thought.
No, it's not. And the fact of the matter is it just is a reality. And part of it is that Jeremy, is that we are in a political year. Long time ago when we first got started, you had a breather once in a while. But in political years, whether it's a midterm year or a presidential year, all the politicians are standing around, and you know they're all millionaires, and they're standing around with their hands out, and it's I'm not saying don't give to political campaigns. I'm not saying that at all. But the fact of the matter is, the really galling part of all of this, and why I think that we need publicly funded campaigns, is that all of this money, you know, send us $3, send us $5, whatever. All of this is money that is gathered up to buy media that is paid to organizations, as I've said 1,000 times before, that hate our guts. The capitalist campaign finance system of the United States, by design, props up a media infrastructure that despises anything liberal or progressive.
We end up funding the Death Star.
Yeah, that's exactly that, Chris. By the way, Ralph says, you know, I kick in at least $40 every month. At least. I mean, we've got a very small group of what Bart Kopp used to refer to as pillars of the community, and a lot more people who just, you know, and I'm glad. Like I say at the end of every program, I'm grateful for everybody who shares their precious finite time engaging in this program however they so choose. I really and truly am. So, you know, that's that. But y'all have now made this, made some bill paying eminently more possible. And I appreciate that immensely. Oh, by the way, Annette and Haley in Arkansas both sent me this story. And you don't, you know, this isn't, as liberals, progressives, we don't celebrate this. Because, you know, the problems this country has are too numerous. But there's a maggot by the name of Representative Steve Womack in Arkansas. And he got popped on Wednesday for possession of meth. The cops came by and noticed that he was sitting on an eyeglasses case. And what's in the eyeglasses case, son? And, well, it was some syringes and some meth. And I guess at 9 grams of meth. I don't know how you dose meth. Is that a lot of meth? I mean, that's more than a quarter ounce of meth.
It's more than enough to kill you.
And so James Womack, 34, was busted. There was a metal spoon in the case, too. Glass vial and a baggie, both tested positive for meth. And he was charged with felony possession of a controlled substance, meth, felony possession of drug paraphernalia, booked on $20,000 bond. He was still in jail as of Thursday. And the thing is, he's got a rap sheet. 2019, he was busted and sentenced to 9 years in prison when he pled guilty to gun and drug charges. But he got out early because of the Rona, and probably having his daddy be a member of Congress didn't hurt. He was sentenced to 10 years in 2010 on drug charges, but went to a state prison boot camp. And then he got out and was popped in 2012 for a parole violation. And I'm guessing... I'm guessing if he wasn't quite so, let's say, connected, or if he wasn't quite so pale, things would not have gone quite so, you know, he would have gone in 2010 and stayed. But the saddest part of all this is he's probably not going to live. He's 34 years old, and it's a miracle he's gotten that far. And his daddy sits in Congress. You can look up his record. He's not known for his compassion. And brays and hoots and grunts about, well, everything that the maggots bray and grunt and hoot about. That's just pathetic. It's just sad.
With all the bullshit that Frau Ingram's been spewing lately about cannabis. Wouldn't you think this would be a lead story for her on her programs? If she's the drugs is bad woman now.
Yeah, but you know, the standard disclaimer. You know, this is a personal thing, and we need to send our thoughts and prayers to the family.
Oh yeah.
And those goddamn liberal judges and liberal DAs that turn all the criminals loose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if Steve Womack will be pissing and moaning about. That'd be interesting. Look around, and see if Steve Womack had anything to say about, say, Ketanji Brown Jackson being soft on crime.
Well, speaking of meth, there's good news and there's sad news. The good news is Monday night on AMC, the first of the final 6 episodes of Better Call Saul premieres. And from what I am hearing through the fan websites and things, it is going to be one hell of a ride.
I bet. I can't wait.
Yeah, one of these days I'm going to start. I've heard so much about it, and I know how well made these things are. We just finished 1883, as I mentioned, and that was just a heartbreakingly beautiful piece of filmmaking.
Robin, to stop you for a second, if you didn't know, that season was slated to have 14 episodes. There's 4 spare episodes. There is a part 2 of that season coming, and it's a 4-part on the first black sheriff. I can't think of his name right now. But it's going to be about his life in the Wild Wild West. Matt Reeves.
Yeah.
And basically how he took down over 200 cowboys in his lifetime never once coming close to getting killed, but killing most of them in the process. But it's going to be all about his life supposedly coming, I think, in January.
Well, the last three episodes of 1883, I just bawled my eyes out. It was so beautiful and you know, sad. Oh, my God. But realistic when you come right down to it. But without any spoilers, it's really nice to see a Western, and it shows that sensibilities have changed. The indigenous people are not the bad guys. And one of them's, and there's actually an indigenous, it's too beautiful. But is anybody watching The Orville? I know we're science fiction nerds here, some of us at least.
I have not. What? I'm trying to catch up on Ozarks.
Well, The Orville is Seth MacFarlane's take on a Star Trek type series. And it has its silly moments, but it deals with issues. And there was one recently that, again, had me bawling. And they took on an issue that's near and dear to my heart. It kind of is my heart. And it's like, wow, I have a feeling somebody like me must have written this episode. Because they got pretty much everything right. And I don't go over into the fever swamps to see, but I'm sure there's no small amount of grunting and barking and hooting about the wokeness of The Orville. Oh, and by the way, a note coming in from Lady B. We don't get the type of fog y'all describe, but that's because we don't have any massive bodies of water nearby here in Colorado. We do have Seven Falls, but it's a stream compared to Robin's home state. We also have the Arkansas and Colorado River, some small lakes in the mountains. That's about it. My point is, here we can't chase waterfalls, so we just stick to the rivers and the lakes that we're used to. And Lady B adds, I'd subscribe, but to be honest, I live paycheck to paycheck. Believe me, I understand, Lady B. My checks aren't always the 1st and the 15th. I'm a la carte because it could get ugly. Still love you, though. Love you more. And here's to wishing Mike well. Yeah, I hope he's back on Monday, because I know it's driving him bananas to be away from the microphone. You can't have done what Mike has done for low so many years and just go, ho-hum, I'm not feeling good. I mean, he's crawled behind the microphone when he had no business being there. I mean, I know this for a fact. And
he says it semi-jokingly, but I think he's somewhat serious always, too, from my cold, dead fingers.
Right. Yeah. And...
Hey, can I squeeze in one little tiny thing about Better Call Saul?
Yeah, certainly. Squeeze away.
And I'm not going to say any more about it. It's not quite a spoiler. It's just a hint. It's a specific hint. Carol Burnett.
What?
This is what I'm hearing.
No way.
She's apparently a big fan of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. And if the people I've been listening to are accurate, watch for Carol Burnett. I have no idea what role she'll be playing. Some say Kim's mother. Some say a judge. I think that she's going to be in a flashback going to Cicero and little Jimmy McGill in grade school being taught by the nuns. And I think she's going to be a nun who tries to set Jimmy on the straight and narrow way because he was a ne'er-do-well even back as a kid. And I have a feeling that she is going to be showing up in Omaha at the Cinnabon and taking him in hand. But that's just my theory. I've never been right about any theory I've had about any show ever. So take that for what it's worth.
I think she's just going to make a cameo with a mop bucket and a mop.
Well, that would be good.
If you didn't watch closely, Robin, you may have missed it, but Tom Hanks made a cameo.
Oh, no, I caught it. I caught it. It was brilliant.
I missed it completely. It was that well done that I never saw it until someone pointed it out.
Oh, and there were a couple of other.
Yeah, his wife was in it, too.
Yeah, she was in it, and so was Billy Bob Thornton.
And so was the creator of the show. Not to give any real things about the show.
Oh, who was the... Where was he? What was his name? Trevor...
He No, it's I can't think. It's Taylor something.
Taylor, yeah, Taylor. Yeah.
He was. You remember after like the floods and the boat and the tornado scenes?
Yeah.
He was the guy that came up and basically saved them from the cowboys with the black beard who rode in. And I thought he was going to be like a Bat Masterson. He had like a fake looking black beard on. That's the creator of the show.
Yeah, I'll be darned.
Like, I'm so happy to see you. He's like Charlie, I think his name was in the show. And Billy, not Billy Bob, but what's his name? The other guy there. The older guy who's been in so many movies. There's an 1883 set. You're sorry, Sight for Sore Eyes. That was the creator on that horse looking angle. That's nice to see you too. Great to see you, Charlie. That was him.
And I guess, let's see, I just got the, yeah, you know, Carol Burnett to guest star on Better Call Saul final season, Hollywood Reporter. Thank you, Ralphs. And lo and behold, I guess she's going to, there's a 10-episode comedy called Mrs. American Pie on Apple TV, and Carol Burnett will star opposite Kristen Wiig in that. Well, that's...
Glad to see she's got some gigs.
Yeah.
It's great.
Sheridan. Taylor Sheridan. There we go.
Ron in Raleigh points out, Carol Burnett, Jody Hamilton, Carol's daughter, is on the Stephanie Miller Show, and she's mentioned that her mom will be on Better Call Saul. I'm looking at this Hollywood Reporter story to see if there's any indication of just, you know, what it's going to be. A character named Marion. Scott. A character named Marion.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. I didn't even think to mention it. But, you know, I think Chris is right, because on the Carol Burnett variety show, she played a part of a cleaning lady, and that was sort of like the logo.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to me in this last, one of the last episodes from the previous half of the season, they were looking out of an office window, and in a neighboring office through the window, and this is at night, you could see a lady or somebody mopping a floor. So I bet you got it. I think you got it. Because some thought she was going to be a judge, and some thought she was going to be a nun. But, yeah, I think you nailed it, Chris.
We'll see.
Get you a Better Call Saul t-shirt.
Or a mug. You still got your mug. You didn't break it, right?
But my horn mug?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got it. I keep telling you that I appreciate it and I have used it, but I'm always afraid because... Until I've had my first couple of cups of coffee, I'm a little shaky, you know, and I don't want to break it. I don't want to drop it on my hard kitchen floor and do anything like
that. You live in terror of breaking it because you're afraid that you'll never see another one.
Well, no. It's not so much that. It's just
Scott. Yours has a lifetime warranty. Trust me. It's okay. Kind of like a Stormy Cromer hat.
And I use it a couple of times a month when I'm in a festive state of being. I haul out the horn mug and say, I don't have to refill it so often. That is a big fucking mug, Robin.
Just imagine.
15 ounces.
Just imagine when those sentient cockroaches take over, and that's going to be the last artifact of mankind.
It has a lifetime warranty.
Holding a mug.
Well, Scott will probably be the deity of the 6-foot-tall sentient cockroaches, and there will be a statue of him in every 6-foot-tall sentient cockroach town square holding up his horn mug.
Yeah,
I just don't think I am worthy of being a deity. The best I can do is lead the morning sing along, you know, where the roaches come out with their little company T-shirts on and sing the company song as we raise the company flag.
It has a lifetime warranty, Scott, but there's no guarantee on turnaround and shipping and ship dates.
Shut the fuck up, Jeremy, okay?
Those wheels have a long way to go.
Technical question. Is it
down.
My lifetime or the mug's lifetime?
We're hoping. It is yours, okay?
Oh, good. Thank God.
You cannot pass this mug down to your heirs and assigns forever.
It'll be in Scott's sarcophagus.
Well, what I need to do is have it fitted with a cap, a hermetically sealed cap, so that once my ashes are done, put them in the mug. I'd probably fill up. That's a good-sized mug. Just put them in there, snap on the cap, and put it in my little crib.
Well, that would be a first. And then we could ship it to Oregon for Chris, and he could take it out to some cliff and talk about, your service in Vietnam and have the ashes blow back in your face, and it would be the ultimate giggle simply because you didn't get that much out of the Big Lebowski.
Well, I did, because I finally did watch it, and I rewatched it not long ago.
Watch it again. It'll take you 2 years to watch it again, but watch it again.
Well, you know who had the right idea in terms of big send-offs is Hunter S. Thompson. Didn't he have some of his ashes put into shotgun shells?
Yeah, and there wasn't there something about him wanting some of his ashes put on the Mars? I don't know how much Elon Musk would charge to put that in his dick rocket, but Elon Musk. Yeah, let's deal. Yeah, I mean that was a big one breaking right before airtime. Elon Musk decided that he really doesn't want to own Twitter after all, and he's going to take his money and go home. And as Brother Deacon Asa pointed out, what did he say? This was a filthy Trump-style swindle from jump. Fuck Elon and the broke dick horse he rode in on. Well, you get a cowbell for that, Brother Deacon.
That's great.
It was a con.
And wasn't that on the B-side of Ziggy Stardust, Elon Musk's dick rocket to Mars?
That was the never-recorded follow-up album to Ziggy Stardust.
Okay.
Ziggy Stardust and Elon Musk's dick rocket to Mars.
Real quick, shout out to the hostesses with the mostesses, Tracy Jan and Kimba, for the quality time I had in L.A. And then same true for Rick and Star and Bella as well. And I had such an amazing time in L.A. And I got to see the very end of Route 66. For those of you out there in trivia land, it is at the end of the pier, the Santa Monica Pier. And I stood right there at the edge and didn't fall in.
Nice recovery. Nice recovery, Chris. You pulled it out of the gutter. From Jeremy shut up to Dick Rockets, we're right back on track.
Well played. But you know what? I just want to say this. The effusive praise that you have received by everybody you have met, Chris, speaks so well of just what a wonderful person you are. And I just want to take a moment and tell you that I'm glad you're part of this community.
Well, thank you. Thanks to everyone. I feel the same right back at you, everybody. Absolutely. And yeah, that effusive praise was blushing, to say the least. Very humbling.
Well, you were... You were there at the shrapnel incident at the Cracker Barrel.
I sure as fuck was. We were talking on the phone, so I'm sitting in the gift shop and fucking around, and I could swear that I was early, right? But of course they got a table already and they're waiting for me. So Tracy calls me. I think I texted her, and then she calls me. She says, "Yeah, dumbass, we're in the restaurant." Oh, okay. From that time.
You know, Tracy's being sweet when she says dumbass. You understand that, right?
I know that. And I see what's going on. It looks like an episode of Emergency 911. And
laughing with.
There's a whole group of folks huddled around Tracy's ankle, and I'm like, "What the fuck happened to your foot?" And then, then they told me what happened. I'm like, they couldn't do that if they tried a million times. And especially from where it landed pretty far away. Not extremely far away, but a fair distance.
Well, that doesn't that mean that there was a little bit of concussive force involved?
Yeah. And the other thing is, they attended to Tracy immediately and right away, and they gave us a lot of attention. I think Tracy's correct. Out of fear of litigation and out of just sheer and utter embarrassment and you know, they were very, very sorry that that happened. You know, it was a terrible thing. But what they didn't do is they didn't clean this shit up, or this sticky syrup with broken glass right by our table. So that didn't make a lot
nice.
Of sense. Yeah, exactly.
Well, the proper thing to have done would be immediately reseat you at another
away
booth or another
it.
Or another table, because.
And like Tracy said, at least take her meal off.
Yeah, comp things.
I wouldn't expect me and Jan to be comped, but take hers off the fucking bill. Yeah. You know,
well, why don't you just pull the table?
Go ahead.
Huh?
Let's get Jeremy. Just say, why don't you just pull the tablecloth out, flip the table, and throw a cheeseburger at the wall? It works for other people.
Oh, yeah. Ta-da!
I kind of wonder about the interaction with the local hierarchy at the place, and then the corporate people getting in on the act, or the regional office or whatever. I kind of think, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe she did it just the right way, but I'm thinking if it had happened to me, I would have made them aware of what had happened on the local level, and that would be that. The next communication they'd get on my behalf would be from an attorney.
Mm-hmm. And I told her, can you imagine if you called the local radio station or TV station or a radio station with this? Because Camarillo's not that big.
And, you know, I can never hear Camarillo without hearing Frank Zappa mispronounce it.
When was that? And on the album?
It's the same album that has Going to Montana on it.
Yeah.
And that comes from... Well, I think it's called, but he sings, she had that Camarillo Brillo flaming out across her head. I mean, her Mendocino Beano, where bugs and flowers had made it red.
That's great. What a great line. What a genius. Why do all the great people die early into Dick Cheney?
Well, am I wrong? Dynamo Hum, Camarillo Brillo, and Going to Montana are all on the same album. Now I can only take Frank Zappa in limited doses.
Oh, okay.
But you know, he was a genius.
Yes.
And I've always loved the fact that he threw Lowell George out of the mothers, because Lowell was just too fucked up, and that's how Little Feat came to be.
Ah, didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean The Mothers of Invention were actually the Mothers of Little Feat.
Are they still touring around?
Oh, I'm some iteration of them. But I don't listen to Little Feat past Lowell George. I mean, okay. he's got a wonderful range, and when he gets down and when he's doing Fat Man in the Bathtub live on Waiting for Columbus. I don't know if Lady B is a Little Feat fan, but I can't hardly stand to do. I used to be able to do it. When he gets down in that grumbly, I said Juanita. And just that screaming growl, it'll make the little hairs stand up on the back of your neck. I think Waiting for Columbus is probably one of, if not the greatest live album ever recorded. You know, the horns on Dixie Chicken. And wasn't that Tower of Power?
That they played with? That played on back up on that? Or
Yeah. I think that was Tower of Power.
Could have been. I don't know. Now you're making me tell that to Alexa. Oh, she woke up. Damn it.
Don't say her name.
I know. God damn it.
Take your name out of her. Take her name out of your mouth, because if you say her name three times, Jeff Bezos shows up.
Oh fuck! Oh, what did that dickhead say, Robin? Didn't he when Sleepy Joe was talking about inflation and this and that, and Jeff Bezos had the balls to say he's got his facts wrong. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
A retort on, butthole Bezos' part. What an idiot. What a fucking idiot.
Oh, no. That was Elon. That was Elon again. It wasn't Bezos.
Oh, I thought it was Bezos.
No, it was Elon, and Joe threw some serious, Joe threw drag queen level of shade at him, and he, Elon's not really, Elon doesn't really understand the issue, but good luck with that going to Mars shit.
Oh yeah.
And by the way, Elon, I'm canceling my deal. It's perilously close to doing Nitwit Nero, but we'll just have to deal with it. And but the funny thing is,
a South African accent.
Yeah, I can't. I can't. Anytime I do a South African accent, it winds up being Australian because I know the difference, but I can't do the difference. But the best part is after he said, I'm backing out. I'm taking my money and going home. The chairman of Twitter's board of directors is a guy named Brett Taylor. And he said, like hell you are. The Twitter board is committed to closing the transaction on the price and terms agreed upon with Mr. Musk and plans to pursue legal action to enforce the merger agreement. We are confident we will prevail in the Delaware Court of Chancery.
Oh. This will be fun.
So what he's done is he's called his bluff. He's saying, I don't think you got the $44 million, Elon.
Billion, right?
Right.
Yeah. And it's in Delaware, huh?
Yeah.
Well, this will be fun. You know, I would love to see that trial. Or, well, you know, it's only a civil, action. But I'd love, that's something I'd love to see on court TV.
Oh, I'll tune in for that.
Yeah. Elon crying and whining. Ugh, be beautiful.
I think the problem with the South African accent, Robin, that you're having, isn't there a heavy Dutch
influence? Yeah, it is. It's the Dutch influence, because Australian. I mean, hell, I even say Australian and not Australian. It's more clear cut for somebody like me. But if you listen to the South African accent, it's twisted about maybe 27 degrees away from an Australian accent. It's basically a lot of the same people, or a lot of people from the same area, but it's the intermingling with the Dutch overlay and the African overlay, because one of the things that a lot of people don't know, and don't ever tell a white supremacist this, but the reason the Southern accent is a Southern accent, you know, the y'alls and what have you, the Southern accent is the Southern accent because of the influence that African languages had on English.
Yeah. Did you ever see that documentary series, The Story of English, that was on PBS with Robin McNeil?
Oh, God, I love that.
Oh, it's a wonder. It's a wonder.
Yeah, he starts out on the shores of the North Sea.
Yeah.
No, that's the, and there was a companion book which I also read, and I think you can find The Story of English on YouTube. Yeah,
but it's
and then there's some BBC stuff along the same line that is absolutely, I was transfixed. Did I just say I was transfixed?
Well, you mixed your metaphors again, and I think you need to stop. Go back,
You're not past go. You're
God,
past
I come up with one of those right off the cuff, and I don't even get a cow. Tough crowd.
Well, you're
cowbell,
you got
cowbell.
The cowbell.
I get
cowbell.
Thank you.
Absolutely. But the thing is, there was one of the places that, in the story of English, one of these communities he was visiting, and he was talking about on like a 10-mile stretch of road, you can hear distinct accents along the way. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And I forget
was it the BBC thing, or was it the story of English where they're talking, where they talk about parsing out the pieces of Anglo-Saxon language from pieces of Norse language? And
that must have been the English.
Well, you have
program.
To, yeah, go look up the story of English BBC, and that's magic too. Because they're better at it than we are.
Well, they've been doing it longer, I think.
God, I don't know what Ferg's cooking in the kitchen, but damned if it doesn't smell good. That boy does that. That does that to me all the time. He waits till I'm on the air, and then he goes in the kitchen and starts cooking, and I'm like, fuck, I'm hungry. I didn't think I was hungry, but I'm hungry.
Like the Popeye cartoons, Wimpy and the Aroma of Hamburgers.
Oh yeah, and his little toes are pointed as he rises off the ground, and he's just led along by his nose.
Oh yes.
God damn it! Now I need to go get a hamburger.
Oh, you want to talk about an evil fuck? Check this out. I didn't catch this. Oh my God, Matt in San Francisco, DeSantis and Musk. Did you see what DeSantis said when he was asked about Elon Musk supporting him? DeSantis didn't miss a beat, and he said, I always appreciate support from African Americans. He's an evil fuck, says Matt. All that's slippery and sleazy. And going back to Tracy and the maple syrup shrapnel, Matt has a long history along these lines, and he says, 24-hour follow-up calls for customer incidents are pretty standard. It's basically to feel out the situation, do some damage control, and somewhat figure out if you can keep the customer from suing. And that's right out of the risk management handbook. And if you can get them to sign, the quicker you can get them to sign a release, the happier corporate will be. Am I wrong, Matt?
I think that's spot on.
Oh, and Jeremy, Chris, this is just for you. I told you I'd take you along for all of this ride. My date last Sunday didn't work out.
Oh, I'm sorry, Robin.
I was awake at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was going to go and do all my getting, because girling is hard. I was going to do all my getting ready. And at 7:20, I got a text that says, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. I can't make it. I'll explain later.
Oh, well, did they call back?
Yeah, he explained.
Oh, okay.
But I spent several hours thinking that I'd just been stood up. And it was like, well, that's par for the course. Fuck it. But
give
no,
another chance.
No. Well, he did explain later, and it was horrifying. And I catastrophized it. I mean, it was heartbreaking. He's got this little fur baby companion, and he'd made arrangements for his neighbor to take care of it. So he took the dog next door to his neighbor's. She opened the door. Her dog was on the leash, but boom, bolted out the door, saw a squirrel or something, ran out into the road, got hit. And then his dog took off, and they couldn't. And so they wrapped the dog that got hit up in a blanket, took it to the vet, emergency surgery. Poor thing died on the table that afternoon. And they eventually found his dog. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, this is an only Robin thing. Not to make it all about me, but I felt like it was all about me. If I hadn't said, you know, hey, let's go to brunch, made me feel a little bit, well, I guess not like a Jonah, but a Jaina.
Now, what a horrible story.
Oh, it is. It is. And I've been meaning to share it, and I figured I'd share it on the front porch.
I'm sorry.
So, you know, as the saying goes, once more unto the breach. Oh, and the delicious thing that, I'm sorry, I've got it in my mouth. It's very hot, it's hot in the interior of the sun. The thing Ferg's frying in the kitchen? He has had a terrible hankering, and I understand it, for skillet fried plantains.
Oh.
And he's frying them now, and he just brought me one. He must have heard me talking. And
I was watching after dinner with my dad.
Oh, this is so good.
It's good. And she beat the chef that beat Bobby Flay was making those pan-fried plantains.
Well, and the thing is...
Some soft, some hard.
And he's been so patient, because when he bought them, they were green as grass, because they always are here. And he's kept them in a brown paper bag, checked them every couple of days. He could have let them get because with plantains, you know, if the skin is just gone completely black and there's no yellow left, that's cool. But I think he reached the limit of his patience. And you know, there's a good bit of sugar in them. They're starchy. They're not bananas, but they got some of that banana flavor, but they're a lot more starchy. And those things, oh, I don't know how he's frying them, but they caramelized. And he brought it to me, and because he didn't want to interrupt the program, he mouthed the word to me, fucking hot. Yeah, do I listen? No.
That's what I was going to say, but he didn't do it.
And so, but oh, they're good. And I hope there's two or three left when I got off the air in a couple of minutes. This has been a great conversation, and thank you to everybody, especially you, Stephen. Thank you so much for knocking out a day of fundraising. So when we start on... wait, what are we getting? 8:30? We'll be at 8:35. We'll be at 8:35 on Monday. And if you're listening over the weekend, please feel free to jump in. We need the help. We always need the help. I love doing this. But it's also a labor of love, and certainly not a labor of wealth. By the way, just a little program note. I'm going to make sure that my phones are fully charged tomorrow when I head to Charleston. So if you follow me on Facebook, I may try to go live with some of it so y'all can see it. And I'm looking forward to it. Even though I checked the weather, and it's going to be it's going to be probably pouring the rain, so I'll wind up looking like a drowned kitty again two Saturdays in a row. But this is like last week was. This is worth getting soaked over. And I
when Jude came down to Portland, we were trying to find a rally. It looked like they were going to have a rally, and then they were going to move it, but I don't know whatever happened to it. But I'm sure there'll be some this weekend, maybe, but I'm working this weekend, so.
Well, you know, listen, for any guys out in the audience, we need allies.
Get your ass.
Women's rights are human rights. Abortion rights are human rights. And everything that we talk about in these little rights ghettos, they're all human rights. All of them. You know, environmental justice, where I live, those are human rights. Rights for BIPOC people, all of them are human rights.
And Robin, it goes to the Reverend Niemöller poem, right? First they came for the trades union.
And I was not a trade unionist, so I said nothing. Then they came for the communists. I wasn't a communist, so I said nothing. Then they came for the Jews. I wasn't a Jew, so I said nothing. And then they came for me. And
there was nobody left.
And there was nobody left to say anything. And I hope it's more of a matter of we don't have to, but if... And I haven't seen that much coverage on the multimillionaire for-profit media. But Dobbs was bad enough. It is Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Slappy Thomas's concurrence, however, that really sounds the alarm. No one is safe. I mean, maybe there are people out there who are saying with regard to their same-sex marriages, well, they can't take it away. They'll just say that more other people can't. I hope there are not people that cynical, but hell, I had an interchange with somebody today who is a pro-life trans person. Holy shit.
Oh, God. Well, it's like Caitlin, right? Is she pro-life?
No, I'm sure she is. Well, I mean, yeah, sure. I have no doubt. I mean, I don't know for certain, but she's a Republican, so, you know.
Right.
And then the EPA decision even put a huge stamp on that.
Yeah.
About we can poison everybody. Fuck them.
I mean, how much damage did they have to do in one term? The EPA decision, the forcing taxpayers to pay for religious hate schools in Maine, striking down perfectly reasonable firearms law in New York.
100-year
law. And a football
law.
Coach can go out to the 450-yard line with his team, and if you don't come out there, you don't get to play in the next game.
Right. Yeah, and
that's for goddamn sure.
And I wish we were a little bit better at kind of guerrilla protest, because, you know, it would be great if, and I'm thinking of Megan here, because, you know, Megan's a pagan. It would be great if there was some pagan teacher who said, well, and maybe, you know, it would be great if they were a football coach. I'm going out to the 50-yard line to pray to Odin. Y'all don't have to come with me. It would be great to see, you know, an absolute obnoxious flowering of so many different religions that Christians despise.
Well, the idea is
to
open up the activities on the 50-yard line, get your runes out there, and get your Book of the Dead, and get your Satanic Bible, and get
the Ouija
your
board.
Oh, the
Ouija board.
Yeah, and, look, I mean, it's entirely possible that there might be some football coach of Mesoamerican ancestry. Yep, bring out the Popol Vuh, the Mayan Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
If I were still teaching, there'd be a colander hanging off the blackboard.
You're goddamn you're right, Roger.
God fucking damn it.
Would you open and close every class, Roger, by saying yar?
And everybody's got to bring a box of pasta with them. Any your choice.
Who ate spaghetti last night?
There's
my God. You ate spaghetti last night. That's my God.
And close out by saying ramen. bless his noodly appendages.
Yep. And Robin, there was the story in Boston, right, about flying the Christian flag.
Oh, God, yeah.
Didn't the Satanists said, hey, we have to fly our flag.
Yep.
The next time. Now, did they? Did that have
no? I don't think they're going to let. I think they actually just closed down the program.
Oh, okay. God damn it.
And the thing that still pisses me off about that, Chris, is that was a 9-0 decision. There was not one justice on that Supreme Court willing to stand up for the separation of church and state. Not one.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you, we're all going to be wearing black and walking around with buckles on our shoes and bonnets on our heads, some of us, sooner than we think.
I'll tell you what, if you take it to its, you know, to its ultimate conclusion, you get you a flaming Buddhist out there on the 50-yard line, that's going to, the band is going to break up quick.
No, Scott, no.
Sorry.
This sounds like a cocktail at a Trader Vic's. God damn it.
Yeah, I think I'll have me a flaming Buddhist.
Well, that's... Robin, if you get picked out as a handmaid, I think they're going to be in for some surprises.
I'm going to be a suspiciously large handmaid, I can tell you that. They'll have to custom make my damn robes and bonnet.
Yeah.
No, they'll probably just make me a drab. Oh, it pisses me off, but you know.
This is scary. Not, you know.
Yeah, we'll giggle. We will giggle all the. We will giggle all the way to the gallows, Christopher.
It's this is too real. It's too fucking real, and it's scary as shit.
Yeah, it is. Well, listen, y'all. It's been a great conversation, and it's kind of weird when we're not all just absolutely afire. Oh, I got to see this. I'm sorry. This just came across my breaking news. From USA Today, nerd time. New dinosaur discovered in Argentina suggests why many prehistoric predators had small arms. And that reminds me of the old meme that says, anytime I'm depressed, I think about a Tyrannosaurus Rex trying to fold a fitted sheet. You know, short arms and...
Well, God made the Tyrannosaurus Rex short arms so they couldn't masturbate.
Then that's probably why they walked around going, ah!
So pissed off all the time. Well, and then I think they made Barney with short arms so he wouldn't grab the kids.
True enough. Let's see. Carnivorous theropod dinosaurs. They look similar to the T-Rex. They're not closely related. They developed their small arms and big skulls independently of each other. And ever since the discovery of T-Rex in 1902, people have sort of scratched their heads about, why would an animal so large have such tiny arms? Well, I guess it explains the proliferation of trumps. I mean, tiny hands, were they useful? There's an alternative viewpoint, which is maybe the arms are actually getting shorter as a result of some other part of the body being optimized. Well, there's about 15,000 dirty jokes there. And generally, people have suggested the skull, obviously, because the skull is so big. Big skull, small arms? I mean, isn't there something about the size of a wrist? Never mind. The skull of Meraxes is 4 feet long. Arms are just 2 feet long. As a result of the skull being optimized in terms of bite force and size, the arms are getting shorter. That doesn't mean the arms were completely useless. They might have had other functions, but probably in terms of hunting and feeding itself, lots of those functions would have moved from the forelimbs to much bigger skulls of these animals over evolutionary time so that they could just eat you with one bite, I guess. I prefer the dirty jokes, but I'm that way.
That's pretty neat, though. I like that.
Yeah, and by the way, Randy Radar said... flaming Buddhist, Scott, it would be a scorched turf tactic. Oh, shame on you, Randy.
Ha ha ha. Cowbell. Get the cowbell now.
Yeah, that was an easy call.
Or a gnur.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's the... Okay. We've got a gnur descent from Roger.
Come on. Yeah,
I think it needs two cowbells and one gnur.
Okay.
So it's a two... It's a 2-1. Right. Roger J. dissenting. Ah, geez, you guys. All right, I hope everybody has a wonderful weekend. Thanks for a great conversation. We've been all over the place, and it's been fun. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. You made some bill paying possible. There's no overstating that value. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this little program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, with your excellent and judicious use of the lightsaber in the chat room. And thank you for, as ever, hosting the front porch conversation. The back porch continues. After this program goes off the air. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Oh, by the way, remember, brand new Fresh Malloy. You'd think I would know this. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Again, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And, yep, thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Billions and billions of hours served with never a bill sent. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and proudly a union shop. Please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives. Ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. You know, it amazes me that there's a bill that is a later number than ours, and it's a Republican national abortion ban bill, and practically every Republican in the Congress has signed this goddamn thing. And we're still struggling to save the lives of people in Appalachia. Your calls to your member of the House of Representatives really mean something. And so if you would do it, H.R. 2073, the AIC Act, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, it means so much, more than I can adequately say. It literally is a matter of the future of Appalachia. Please stay safe. We talked about BA4 and BA5. Get your booster, okay? Please get your booster. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask. It's mask time again. Use your hand sanitizer. Take something with you everywhere. Maintain your social distance, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes babbling toward you, saying, I'm backing out of my $44 billion deal, or whatever, avoid that little transphobic twit like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.